Yeah, Wendy, welcome, Wendy. And I saw Zarina around. We've got someone here from PMG, Parliamentary Monitoring Group. Can you just stand up that the people can see who you are? There he is. Looks like a runner. Welcome to the meeting. And then the Department of Water Affairs, welcome to you. One of the main departments in South Africa. If you haven't got water, you've got trouble. Honourable members, we're going on where we left off last night. The style will be the same, that we give the department the opportunity to do their presentation between 10 and 15 minutes, going straight into their responses to the FFC's recommendation and to a business-like, and then we give ample time for questions one round, because we've got four departments to deal with today before 2 o'clock. I'm going to ask the department to introduce themselves and also indicate who will be leading the presentation, please.
Chairperson, good morning. Thank you. I'm Trevor Balser from the Department of Water Affairs. I'm going to be leading the presentation, and I'll just introduce the rest of the team here who are going to help field any questions during the discussion time. And I'm going to start with Tandeka Mbasa, the DDG Regions. On her left, the CFO, Ms. Ernest Masayaya. On the Tandeka's right, Fred van Sail from Water Services, from our Branch Policy and Regulation. And next to him, DDG Cornelius Reuters, Dr. Cornelius Reuters, responsible for infrastructure. Thank you, Chair.
Can we get the... There's a request that you move to the front. Thank you, Honourable Masida. Yeah, the men must remember to be good to their wives on Sunday. Actually, every day of the year. Yeah, but especially on Sunday. We want to get clarity from the department regarding the Director General's position. Because since we started our hearings, DGs were absent. Yesterday we had an acting DG that was present. Just to put it on record, because it is practice that if a DG can't attend, there must be a written apology and power delegated to the Deputy DG, etc., who will be dealing with the presentations. Can we just get that clarity, please?
Chair, thank you. That was remiss of me. The leader of our delegation is DDG Regions, Ms. Tandeka Mbasa, and an apology from our acting DG, Ms. Nobubele Ngale. She's in a hearing next door with a SCOPA hearing. So that's the reason that she isn't here this morning. So we've had to try and spread our resources across your committees this morning. Thank you.
Thank you to the department. I just want to put it also on record. These meetings of our hearings were scheduled for next week. Because of the NCP's workshops, WIPS workshops, and ANC Lehotla, meetings were brought forward. So that is the reason why everything went a bit quicker. Thank you for the clarity. You can proceed.
Chair, thank you very much. We've got quite a number of slides. You indicated 10 to 15 minutes. I'm going to whiz through them as quickly as possible on the assumption that maybe the presentation has already been distributed. Just in terms of content, I'm not going to read it or read the full all the bullets under the content, but I'm going to try and just give you some context as to where the department is in terms of our funding, and then run through in terms of challenges, backgrounds, some issues raised by the Commission, and then particular recommendations from the department. just looking at our allocation, Chair, which I'm sure everyone is very familiar with, current year an allocation of $7.89 billion. That's in terms of the voted funds through Parliament. It doesn't include the funding which also through the water trading entity. We only indicate here the voted funds. Important line item just to note there when I come to issues around earmarked funds is the third line there, or the line which indicates $2.717 billion, which is the amount allocated for water services. What's also important just to look at the analysis of our own, the funding we have available to us, is a very large portion of the funds allocated to the department relate to earmarked funds. So you've got $3.1 billion of the $7.8 billion as earmarked funds, and essentially those are the funding that come through either on the three grant programs which the department is responsible for, or alternatively other earmarked funds for infrastructure development, for argument's sake, for example, the DeWitt Dam, and also earmarked funds for the Working for Water and Working on Fire programs. So quite a large portion of the budget is bespoken for, so to speak, before we even kick off the year. It's very focused programs that we run into. And that, of course, does run, I've only reflected here the 09-10 figures, it does run across to the outer years of the MTF period as well. Just in terms of the grants that the department is responsible for, there are three grants. It's a regional infrastructure grant, the water services operating subsidy, and the water sanitation and schools and clinics grant. I'll touch on those three very briefly. The regional bulk grant, a focused grant to deal with the lack of regional bulk infrastructure to be able to meet our targets for universal access, and it's intended to support those teams that MIG is targeting. It links the water resource to the communities through that grant program and get benefit of scale. It's integrated management, so it's multi-users. We look at the institutional aspects and arrangements in terms of ownership, implementation, and O&M. But I think the O&M, looking at the FFC technical report, O&M is an issue which comes through. I don't dwell on it a great deal in the presentation, but, Chair, I think it is an issue that needs, in my opinion, quite a focused debate in terms of asset management and the issues around operation and management. Operation and maintenance, sorry. There are the financial issues included in that grant relating to viability and funding. The grant is structured in such a way that one is attempting to leverage co-funding, and that co-funding not being other grant funds, but other sources of funding which municipalities or other agencies are able to secure. Implementation options, obviously we look at the range of implementation options as well through the grant, and then of course sustainable management with regard to water resources, which is a direct responsibility of the department, but then of course the operations and maintenance, which becomes a responsibility essentially of local government, and it is a particular area of concern, as I said earlier, needs to be taken forward. The water services operating grant is a grant which is in a phase-out stage. It covers the subsidies for schemes which were previously operated by the department and have been transferred to local government. And in terms of that grant framework, the subsidy is being phased out and gradually incorporated into the equitable share allocations of municipalities. And I'll come to some of the challenges around that as well, because also in the FFC report, your technical report, I note the comments made around the equitable share and the fact that equitable share does make provision for water supply and sanitation, but it's not ring-fenced, and so consequently funding doesn't go back into operation and maintenance activities. So we are in effect, and the FFC's technical report picks it up, we are in effect running down our infrastructure in the country, and we need to take some, in my opinion, pretty urgent action to deal with that deteriorating infrastructure due to a lack of investment into our current and our existing infrastructure. The water and sanitation to schools grant, it's running out into its the last year, this year, we've got 350 million rand on the budget, and really to deal with the service delivery backlogs for water and sanitation to schools and clinics. Clinics have already been completed, and we're dealing with the schools aspect as well. And that's an integrated program with the Department of Education, and we do give some progress there in terms of schools that have been provided with water and sanitation. I just break down there the grants. You'll see them there. The Water Services Operating Grant, you'll see it's a grant that is fading out, if I could put it that way, and that's because it's, if you look at the Division of Revenue Act, generally it's covered as a Schedule 6 and a Schedule 7 grant. The Schedule 7, the grant in kind element, and the Schedule 6, which is direct grant to the municipalities, and over a period of time, those funds are being taken up into the equitable share. Regional Bulk Infrastructure Grant started in 2007. Funding for that grant increasing annually, but the need is absolutely huge at the moment. And if you look at our current allocations on an annual basis, it's going to take a very, very long time to deal with the backlog. So I'll come to the overall need. The water and sanitation to schools, 350 last year in terms of that grant allocation. I'm just going to ask my colleague if we could just to talk very quickly. That's my colleague Fred from SAIL in terms of some of the water services challenges in terms of that slide that's up there now, Chair. Thanks, Fred.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honourable members. This picture reflects the water services, basic services backlog. To inform you, we define it now in two categories. 2 years ago, Parliament decided that there will be universal access to water. That means the historic formal backlog and then the housing or sustainable settlement related one. This reflects the formal historic backlog, which is about 1.1 million households. Now, we have done great. We are exceeding 90% access to water now. But the remaining backlog is critical, and those are the three critical areas. The Eastern Cape, the Eastern South, Eastern Cape, and KZN, where there is water. But you know, it has got these huge mountains, 800 meters, and we have to get the water up to those people. And that's a massive issue. That requires water resource development, the dams, as well as huge bulk infrastructure. We know that we are already exploring all the groundwater we can, but we have serious problems in those areas. To the north and Limpopo area, the Silikuni and the Luwu areas, we don't have enough water. So we're building some dams, but it's also bulk infrastructure dependent, and we've got serious challenges with water. And to the west there in the Kalahari area, you know there's limited water. So the water resources is also limited, and we have serious problems. So to deal with this, we need to have bulk infrastructure to address the basic services. But the problem is that bulk also serves economic development, and that's possibly a benefit. And we need to also look at the economic side, and good planning, integrated planning that. What that slide doesn't show is the opposite side, that the universal access to water also implies the housing-related needs, which my colleagues indicated to me is about 2.2 million households, which is double that of the existing historic one. So our biggest challenges are not only in the rural areas, but in the urban areas, where we need to deal with this. So we need a proper alignment with the sustainable settlement program, and they also need infrastructure, the internal infrastructure, water supply and sanitation. Now, so we have emphasized the need for bulk, and then we also have a serious problem. Those figures only reflect those people who've got infrastructure, but the figures are going up again due to failures and lack of sustainable management. So we have to focus on sustainable management. Thank you.
I could then proceed on to the next slide. Just in terms of sketching the current situation, we indicate the access levels at the moment. And just to point out that in terms of remaining backlogs, 4% of that basic water supply is largely as a result of a lack of bulk infrastructure. We've just gone through an exercise of determining what the bulk infrastructure needs are, and I must apologize that we put an inflated figure in the presentation. If you wouldn't mind correcting that, that figure should be 60 billion, not 80 billion. But it's still a very big, figure. And I think the point that I would make, if you have a look at the way the allocations are running at the moment with the outer year, the current MTF of 1.4 billion, it's going to take quite a number of years if we just stick at that funding level to actually deal with some of the infrastructure needs. The other aspect which I picked up in your in the FFC technical report, and we're trying to deal with it in our proposals to National Treasury with regard to the infrastructure grant, is dealing with the question of wastewater treatment. In your FFC report, when you look at tariffing and funding, you tend to focus more on the water side. We're looking at the front end and the clean end, and there isn't a huge focus on the back end, the dirty end of the of the value chain, if I could put it that way. And that's the part of the value chain which has a huge impact on the environment. So we, in terms of our discussions with National Treasury this year, will certainly be introducing a new line, if you want to put it that way, to deal with the back end, the dirty end. And it's an area that really needs serious attention. It's impacting very negatively on our resources, and obviously that has a knock-on effect in terms of increasing the cost of providing water through having to put in very sophisticated infrastructure to treat poor water quality. Challenges, Chair, universal access remains a challenge. I was meeting those targets, which were 2014, if we don't get some of that bulk infrastructure, is going to be quite a challenge for us. Extended sustainable settlements and the program for housing, the bulk infrastructure. We're looking at the regional bulk, but there are also issues relating to some of the internal bulk which aren't adequately addressed in terms of the MIG grant. And then, of course, the sustainable management of schemes, which really has to be put in bold, and we need to take that forward and put it very high on the agenda. It's not the sexy type of work. It's nice to do development of new work, but we really need to deal with that non-sexy type of work and protect our existing infrastructure base as well. I don't need to go through the background in terms of the bill. You're all familiar with that. The issues raised by the Commission, which we've noted, pertain to the simplifying of the bill to its core essence, refraining from tendencies leading to a proliferation of conditional grants, the intergovernmental loan agreements guarding against danger of delays in policy implementation, capacity building grants remain part of DORA, and redemarcation and addressing of the fiscal and financial impacts. Chair, while having said that, you know, there's one needs to move away from a proliferation of additional grants, when one does look at some of the bulk infrastructure that's needed, some of the schemes that need to be developed are the value or the budget required for the scheme, one individual scheme to be developed, is in excess of the overall grant that we have in the funding through the grant at the moment. So we need to have a look, see how we address that. If you think of the wastewater management in the greater Johannesburg, Mfuleni, Siribeng areas, I mean, we're looking at a multi-billion rand infrastructure that's required there, which if we had to go into implementation would take up all of the funding we have through the grant at the moment. And we're looking at a project which once we get it up and running, would be in the order of 3 billion rand to attend to the pollution issues in the Vaal River. So, you know, you're talking of big pieces of infrastructure, and maybe those particular projects might need to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. The transfer of water services works to water boards, the proposed take-up and the reduction of water services operating grants, I've already raised that one. What is a problem there in terms of the grant is that it gets assimilated into the equitable share, and it doesn't necessarily then get ring-fenced and go back into operation and maintenance. So there's no provision for an increased cash flow in terms of refurbishment and operating that infrastructure. There's also disparity between the intention of the transfer and the water services framework, which we need to try and deal with. Sector departments are accountable and obliged to ensure effective outcome and performance through regulation, oversight, and leadership. The sector's roles have been confirmed time and again by Cabinet, and the acts and systems must enable sector departments to fulfill this responsibility and should not undermine it. And my colleagues will talk to some of the difficulties in that regard around the current arrangement with the Division of Revenue Act. We need accurate and up-to-date information is required on time to be able to make decisions. We need focus on information should be outcome and not only address the financial, should be a focus on the outcome and not only address the financial expenditure. We do tend to chase the expenditure. As we get the money into our budget, we've got to get it out, and sometimes we compromise the outcome in terms of, or could compromise the outcome in terms of just chasing expenditure. We need to be... Okay, Chair. What I'm saying is that we need to focus more on the outcome of the grants and the infrastructure we're trying to put in, and not only focusing on the expenditure. I mean, we get the budget in, and we get whipped sometimes for not spending the budget and landing up with rollovers. Now, sometimes there are very good reasons why you might not be able to spend the money. And that's all I'm trying to highlight. We've been at the whipping end for rollovers before. I'm not giving a warning to say we're going to have rollovers. All I'm saying is we need to just try and have a balance there, Chair. Yeah, okay. Participatory planning is a key success factor for service delivery, and that I don't think we can argue again. We need sufficient funds should be secure to ensure achievement of the targets. The allocation of funds are subject to grant purposes and conditions, and what one would need to do is to make sure that the various grants that, like the MIG and the Regional Bulk Infrastructure Grant, where there is a linkage, that the conditions and purposes, that there's alignment on those conditions of purposes. The principles should be applicable to all grants and applied accordingly, and the funding gap should be identified and appropriate funding put in place. And I've already indicated we've got the Regional Bulk Infrastructure Grant, we've got the MIG grant, and there seems to be a little bit of a gap in terms of some of the funding for the bulk connector infrastructure, but my colleagues would be able to help me with some of the issues around that as well. Obviously, we feel that the grants must be managed in a consistent and transparent manner. The same rules apply to the programs. Objectives of the grants is outcome-based and focused on the user. Allocations must be focused on actual needs and not on the implementation process. And the special precautions must be built into the bill or the act to ensure that poor performance by implementing agents doesn't result in users being penalized. The one concern which we've raised before, albeit that we've got a very good working relationship with National Treasury, that has been an issue which has been discussed on a number of times, and my colleagues will also cover it, is that the bill, the Act, focuses on monitoring and not necessary sector leadership and strategic planning and the regulatory responsibilities. And we need to, as a sector leader in the water sector, need to have a greater role to play in that and find a way of doing that. The argument has been used before that one shouldn't use the bill or the Act to regulate those activities, and it should be done through our primary legislation, which the department is responsible for. But that becomes we need to try and get a bit better synergy in that regard. The timeframes for municipal reporting don't allow for effective strategic monitoring and in-time national response. The reporting is always historical of nature, and sometimes to take action, one is lagging quite a bit in terms of being able to take effective action. If the outcome reporting is minimal and not in line with reporting requirements on finance, my colleague Fred, I wonder if I could ask you to speak to those particular sections which we've identified. I don't know, Chair, whether you want us to get into that type of detail, but we have identified specific sections in the legislation which we think needs to be considered, looked at. Yeah, thank you. Shall I move on? Yeah, thanks, Chair. So can I hand over, if you don't mind us crossing the room every now and again?
We're going to have, as you know, an NTPDF process very soon, which will be dealing, will be focusing specifically on the division of revenue here. Maybe they can give us what they want to give us now, but I think that time will be more appropriate to focus on the issues. But I think that time there might be a draft, what we call a division of revenue here. But if they want to do it now, it's fine. But I thought that would be a more appropriate time to do it.
Let's just run through it quickly, and I'll ask my colleague to run through those items right through until you just get to the general recommendations, just to get it into your system. And then I take the point, Chair, which is made, that we can deal with it in another forum in more depth as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think the issues that we in principle support many of these conditions, but there's a lot of inconsistencies in the conditions. For example, we use the bulk and we totally support Section 21, which specifies we have to get the municipalities involved and the neighboring authorities. There must be good planning. It sustainably must be arranged. But there are no such conditions for MIC. So the local governments can go out and spend it without proper planning. And we did in the policy side have special sector conditions that was approved by the DGs and the committees, but that has been excluded lately from the last 2 years. It's not in the conditions anymore. So there are no sector conditions. And you know that water is a scarce resource. We want to highlight that they must look at this scarcity of water and stretch the water, stretch the funding, and there are inconsistencies in this whole action. In the mixed cities, we are not allowed to monitor anything. So we can't track it, and the big backlog or challenges in the cities as well, and we can't track it. So we're not allowed to track it. In the MIC policies, there are also statements from MIC that we're not allowed to monitor either directly with systems. We don't want to approve, but we need strategic assessment to know what's happening. And we experience a lot of leakage of the funds. It is a conditional grant, a specific purpose grant, the MIC, but it's applied for high levels of services and not for its intended purposes. So all we plead that there should be consistency, so when they are MIC and big, that these funds are got the same conditions and we apply the same rules.
some of the general recommendations. Some of the recommendations already talk to items which I've raised. The Water Services Operating Grant has particular issues which we need to look at going forward. I think the fact that it is now being assimilated into the equitable share, and that we seem to think that there's a lack of communication between the finance departments and the technical departments at the municipal level, and the funding for operations and maintenance is not being adequately ring-fenced, that could lead to some problems in the future. We find it beneficial to refer municipalities to specific clauses in the DORA, and should the applicable clauses be reverted to either the PFMA or the MFMA, consideration should be given to clearly ring-fencing the processes and procedures attached to conditional allocations for ease of reference, as we seem to be struggling in both of those. As a national transferring officer, we're falling under the PFMA and the receiving officers under the MFMA. Although cognizance has been taken in the provision made in the DORA to provide for mechanisms to deal with the implementation of redemarcation of municipal boundaries, it should be noted that when municipal boundaries are redemarcated and will work to services transfers if applicable, the agreements need to be reassessed. And that's quite a challenge in terms of the way that the funds are directed to municipalities who are designated as water service authorities. Consideration should also be taken into the social assistance program at local government level so as to maximize the impact to individuals and families. With regard to the implementation and maintenance strategy, funding by government, hang on, here am I. We need to try and get to a point where, with regard to maintenance, our maintenance strategies, that business should also come to the party. The pricing and tariffing structure should be based on life cycle costing throughout the water services delivery value chain, and this approach will ensure that the cost for the source and the bulk are taken into consideration when structuring prices and tariffs. And Chair, I've already indicated that the tariffing in the technical report seem to focus on the water side, but there is also a tariff issue related to the discharge as well, and it's an issue that's been dealt with in the department in terms of our waste discharge charge system. So when one starts looking at tariffing and your proposals around how one should deal with the regulation around tariffing, we need to look at both ends of the chain. The Act does at the moment to make provision for us in particular to transfer funds to water boards as implementing agents, and maybe going forward one needs to have a look, see how we can accommodate other delivery models as well through maybe PPP arrangements. Fred, do you want to talk to that Chapter 6, Section 45 in terms of disclosures? You did some of the technical stuff around the bill or the Act. No, it's okay. We'll deal with that slide 26, Chair. I think that item we can deal with in the further submission as well. Likewise with the items on slide 27 dealing with Section 12, Section 16, and Section 15 in terms of the specific items within the Act.
Or the bill. No, Chair, with respect. I'm not sure. I don't know what the invitation saying. My understanding is that we would want draft, or no longer draft now, to respond to the recommendations of the Fiscal and Financial Commission, what you call it. To those recommendations, then what they are raising.
I mean, we have been dealing with these issues over the years. We know that there's going to be an opportunity to deal with the Division of Revenue. Now, I don't think that we should focus on the Division of Revenue for 2009-2010, because it's sooner going to be something of the past. We should be focusing. Our focus in October will be the Division of Revenue for 2010 and 2011. So that the issues that you're raising will be more relevant at that time. I would have expected you to respond to those, to the recommendations by FSC submission. Really, I'm not sure what the invitation did say somehow. I'm very worried about this presentation, you know.
Yes, when we started before the meeting, I indicated that the department must speak to the FSC's recommendation. That was before the meeting started. I've just paged through the pages. I don't see it. Because I received this document this morning. Can we get some reaction, please?
Thank you. With your permission, can...
Please,
Honorable Mashire. Yeah, Chairperson, I have got a feeling that we have allowed them to get lost for quite long, and now I think they are left with only 3 pages, if not 4, if we allow them to get lost forever. And then we'll just simply talk to issues that relate to the FSC ourselves.
I suppose you've got the information on the FSC. That specific recommendation, you must respond to the specific recommendation, and that's all. That's the purpose of this meeting.
Thank you, Chair. Please accept our apologies. It looks like we missed our terms of reference a little bit. But basically, looking at the recommendations that are coming here, specifically addressed under 7.2, we as a department, we agree with the recommendations, and this is coming from the experience and the lessons that keep coming with the process of implementation.
I'm sorry, Chairperson. Sorry, TDG. Are you ready for the presentation that you...
I will go through each.
You're making, each. Because if you're ready with that, it means that you must get copies of that.
Chair, we
really do not want to pressurize you. We want you to respond intelligently to these things so that we really don't waste your time and our time as well. We would want an intelligent response that would interrogate this matter. There are very important issues that FSC has raised, which I thought that there were more, an issue that you would really have loved to respond to them. But when you engage, we'd also like to have copies and make sure that at least you have consulted amongst yourselves to say, is this the correct view or not? I tend to want to suggest, I mean to agree with that suggestion that we allow them to go and have time, Chair, to give them another date where we can have a proper, what you call, a response. Not the Division of Revenue. MTPPS will come, will inform you about the date very soon, and then we'll deal with the MTPPS. That's why we'll focus on the Division of Revenue. But don't waste your time on the what you call. And then on the issues that you're raising, very interesting issues that I would have loved to respond to, that we discussed in the previous years. You remember there was a clause 16 where you had to consult with Treasury and all the other departments, DPLG at the time. But I won't want us to go to that now. So we really, with respect, Chairperson, ask them to go and prepare a proper response to FSC. Then you can give them a date.
That's the honourable member.
Yeah, Chair, I was saying let's just take a decision that they do the presentation, they finish, and then we give them time to go and prepare another response to FSC. Otherwise, we'll be discussing issues that are not in the agenda. Yeah, it's irrelevant.
agreement in the committee for that, Honorable Chani?
I need guidance, yes. Honorable Sogoli is saying we should release them, which I support. Now, other members are saying, no, allow them to complete. I think there's no need for that. If we all agree that the department did not understand their mandate or the brief for today, let them go back and prepare themselves. We'll give them a date. Remember, we don't have the whole day today. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chani. There's agreement from the committee side. We will then arrange a new date for the department to come back to this committee and to the rest of the presentation. And zoom into what is the real issue. We'll notify the department. I can't give you a date now. That's impossible because we must negotiate with the NCP program committee and request for a date. To the department, and thank you for coming. You were here. We listened to you. We've got your documentation, and you have been released. Thank you so much.
But I think that it should be very soon because we are expected to compile a report on this. So it can't take long. But you're right to say, it would have been useful if by the time they left here, they had a date. Maybe if they could sit over there, and then our staff deals with the issue of the date. So that by the time they leave here, they have the date.
I'll ask Mr. Mkize, sitting there at the back, just to liaise with the department. Next will be human settlements. Are they here? I've seen them. Yeah, there they are. Agriculture, forestry and fisheries, are they here? Oh, there they are in the corner. Honourable members, we are being issued now with their presentation, so we've got a disadvantage here. Agriculture, are you? We welcome the department. They will have to introduce themselves, inform us who will be leading the presentation, and if the head of the department is present. If not, there's the apologies, etc.
Good morning, Chair. I will start with the apology. My name is Ms. Wongela. Sorry, on reduction and apology. My name is Wongela Bando. I am the Deputy Chief Financial Officer in the Department of Human Settlement. I apologize for the DG who would have been here in the presentation to lead the delegation. Unfortunately, I think you will have heard probably that there is a meeting scheduled between our minister and the premier with regard to some of the province, with regard to intergovernmental outstanding issues that need to be resolved with regard to housing. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. So the DG is attending the meeting with the minister. I am present here with two colleagues. On my left is Albert Crofton. She will be likely doing the substantive presentation with regard to the presentation that we're making. And I also brought Mr. Johan Mimi, who deals with our information management in the department. Chair, we will concentrate. We have prepared a presentation that dealt with matters raised by FFC, in particular with no other issues but that we normally have brought during the other discussions, and I would hope that the discussions will then center around that. Yes. And with that, Chair, I will ask my colleague to start the presentation, and then I'll take questions with regard to the issues that are raised. Just before that, I would like to indicate that as a department, we've looked at those at the chapter that deals with the matter that relates to our department, which is largely on rental housing. Mindful that in future it might also include other issues that will are now being discussed and that will be dealt with under the new mandate of human settlement. By and large, I think we I would like to express that we fully agree and understand the recommendations that have been made, and in that regard, the presentation will reflect on how we are dealing with some of those things that have been raised. We also think that substantively, the report is fairly representative of the issues that it has raised. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Chair, I just wanted to check whether I have not misunderstood the DDG. It looks like there are sections which will actually talk to their mandate in future that they're not going to talk to now. But my understanding is that the FFC is talking about issues relating to 2010-2011, which by then will be talking to those issues which they want to exclude now. And I'm not sure whether I understood him correctly. And I just by implication, I thought that maybe he's referring to issues that relate to access to water and other things that he's going to exclude. But by the document that we're talking about, it talks to the mandate of human settlement at that particular time in 2010-2011. And I just need to be clarified what does he mean actually.
Yeah, we're heading for the future now. We were talking about this document.
Yes. No, no, Chair, I thought that we actually had to read the document. And with regard to, and we recognize that we are in a transition, there are still discussions to be, that are proceeding with regard to function transfers. We therefore left some of the discussions with the line function departments that have been dealing with those things. I think in particular, with reference to our core mandate previously, which was housing. We have taken back chapter and said we will deal with that. And hopefully as the new discussions will emerge, then they will deal with the rest of the other things. I think that is the approach we've taken.
Sheila, are you covered?
Chapter 5.
Doesn't look
like that's where we will concentrate.
Yeah, I'm not convinced because, you see, the change of mandate, actually, when it talks to funding or budgeting, we are actually talking about only this coming September, that the budget is going to be realigned, and then they will be having full mandate of those other things that you want to exclude. And now the question is, like as I'm saying, is we're talking about a document that talks to 2010-2011, starting next year, April. And by that time, this department will be fully on top of its mandate. But now, we're not going to be able to comment ourselves on their input, on those issues that they are going to actually leave outside. And now the question is, when are we going to have that opportunity to do this, to deal with those particular matters as they are actually removing them? I think we may be facing another situation that says they are not fully ready for us. They're actually going to talk to part of what they're supposed to be talking to. That's my understanding, Chairperson. Thanks.
Mr. Goni?
Thanks, Chair. I see that colleagues are ready. They are on fire today, Mr. Dabat. We're going to be firing everyone this morning. Now. But our colleagues, that's what I understand. If by the GPG, he seems to be saying to me, the section of the FSC, the chapter of the FSC that deals with matters that concern to them, is chapter 5 of this FSC submission. And that chapter 5 of the recommendations of the FSC seems to be focusing on rental housing only. Mm. And therefore, they would want to respond to that submission for today. Then we might invite them tomorrow for anything else. But for today, and this is what we want, we have invited departments to respond to the FSC submission. So that is what they are saying that they are doing. But I think that, colleagues, the issue that we have been concerned about this week, ending today, that worries us as members of parliament, is the issue of coordination, you know. However, we know that there's a Department of Human Settlement, there's a Department of Dwarf, but at the end, all these things link with water must come to housing, and this must come to that, there must be secured, all those kind of things. But maybe we should allow each department to focus on what on its mandate. But if you're able to talk to the issues of our concerns around coordination, I think that we'll have to do that. And I think that when the Division of Revenue is there, it will talk very much to these concerns that we're having, that how do we, what to call it, as departments link. We are one country. We are one government, and therefore there will have to be linkages. But I think that we should allow them to respond to their own mandate today, colleagues, if I may suggest it.
Mr. Goni, thank you for that input. So the department to clear them on Chapter 5. So we are clear on that. Then you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. On Chapter 5, as indicated, it deals with rental housing. The specific recommendations made by the FSC are reflected on the following slides: relaxation and flexibility on the eligibility criteria for the social housing restructuring capital grant to allow projects falling outside the designated restructuring zones to access funding, the number of designated restructuring zones to respond to excess demand for rental housing, minimum unit sizes for developments of existing buildings. Then the process of disbursing funding for rental housing within the housing sector should be made shorter to minimize time lag following the submission of approved project plans. The Social Housing Regulatory Authority should improve intersectoral coordination between various government departments responsible for integrated human settlement. And lastly, the qualifying income band should be reviewed to ensure that individuals are not unfairly excluded from benefiting from the subsidy, for example, due to increasing costs of living. I'll respond to each one in turn and then just have a concluding comment that pulls them all together relating to rental housing. Firstly, in terms of the eligibility criteria for the restructuring capital grant, and where projects fall outside the designated restructuring zones and their ability to access funding. In terms of the way the social housing program was crafted, it's a targeted program rather than a mass housing delivery program. And it's targeted around specific restructuring objectives rather than the mass provision of affordable rental housing. The restructuring aims will facilitate the provision of private rental accommodation by the private sector in areas where currently no or minimal investment in rental housing is occurring, but is definitely required. The designated restructuring zones therefore ensure that government's investment in rental housing, which is quite a substantial investment compared to the other rental housing programs, is targeted and focused in areas where it is required and will be sustainable. Whilst the social housing program has a dedicated and targeted focus, the CRU, or Community Residential Units Program, which is also a rental housing program, is not limited by the designated restructuring zone and can therefore be accessed in any area. And the two programs, therefore, complement one another in terms of scaling up the delivery of rental. The current institutional subsidy can also be accessed outside the designated restructuring zone for rental housing. We've worked in collaboration and done a study on rental housing in rural areas. And the indications are that the...
Yes, we can. We please put ourselves on.
Yeah.
All of us.
We've done a study of rental housing requirements in rural housing areas, and the indications are that for the social housing program income bands, rental housing is provided to, for example, teachers and police officials and so on as an employment perk and would therefore not be required through a subsidy program of this nature. We are also looking at some pilots in rural areas so that we can see to what extent we take this program to the rural areas and designate zones in those areas. So at the moment, there aren't any zones there, but we are looking into it through some pilots in those areas. Also, informed through the experience on social housing development prior to the introduction of the current restructuring capital grant, indications have been that location of rental housing stock is critical to its success and sustainability and needs to be carefully selected to ensure that rental housing is sustainable. And this informs the designated restructuring zone approach of the social housing program specifically. Chairperson, on the number of designated restructuring zones and whether they relate to the significant demand for rental housing demand and need is mostly reflected according to the statistics in metro and urban areas. That's where the main concentration and need is. Currently, all the metros and the larger urban areas are covered and are able to designate restructuring zones. And in most cases, out of the 13 municipalities and metros, they have designated zones. In designating the zones, local, province, and national jointly inform and agree on the specific designated restructuring zones based on an analysis of the demand and the sustainability of rental housing in the area, as well as looking at the restructuring objectives which are specific to the program, and that's social, economic, and spatial restructuring elements. Often we are approached for the social housing program by developers who would like to develop rental housing where an opportunity arises, and that opportunity could be land is available or it's available cheaply or so on. The opportunities, however, don't always meet the restructuring criteria or are not always suitable for sustainable rental housing. So by removing the designated restructuring zones, we would end up having to respond to these various opportunities, and we wouldn't be guided and actually be achieving the objectives of the program, which is restructuring objectives specifically. So the designated restructuring zones as a criteria of the program ensure that government's investment is targeted and focused and will be sustainable. Chair, the next element on the minimum unit sizes for development of existing buildings. On the one hand, the social housing program is based to encourage new rental stock development, and the whole program is biased towards new development. The CRU program, however, deals with existing rental stock, and it's flexible enough to accommodate the redevelopment of existing buildings. The minimum unit sizes, as defined, are linked to the subsidy quantum and the financial model informing the overall program. So should those sizes change, the subsidy quantum and the whole model would need to be changed. So the unit sizes, if they are not defined, the program costs would be completely open-ended and the costs would not be able to be contained and managed, as well as the product that is to be rented. Further to this, we do acknowledge that there are currently developments of rental housing in inner-city areas which take existing buildings and develop rooms with shared facilities. It's a typical inner-city redevelopment approach, especially to address lower-income groups. So we are developing a new minimum spec and financial model for this approach, but we want to avoid the creation of possible future hostels or open the door for slum landlords to utilize the program in inner-city areas. So we've been quite careful to open the door for that element. Chairperson, on the funding disbursement recommendation, I note up front the proper management of rental stock is the key success factor for rental housing. The process of accelerating the delivery of rental housing considers, on the one hand, the readiness of the project specifically to be able to construct and deliver. Secondly, and quite importantly, the management of the project post-construction. And that management would have to last 20, 30 years, even longer, so that that project is maintained. And then those two elements together relate to the cost of the overall project. To manage those three elements and assess projects on those three elements, we've developed standard assessment tools for projects, and they've been agreed and developed with the sector. These are utilized to assess each element as indicated above, so that we make a proper decision and have sustainable rental. The funding disbursement process also complies with the various PFMA and government requirements and controls, as well as the viability of the rental housing. As the sector has become familiar with the process, the turnaround times have shortened, largely because the applications that have been submitted have been of a better quality and have adhered to all the requirements of the standard tools. In the first 2 years of the program, a lot of missing documents, missing information, or projects that were really not ready were submitted, and that made the process much longer. But the sector is becoming familiar with it, so the turnaround times are shortening. Second to that, in the program guidelines, we've also defined specific turnaround times for government as well as the other role players, so that there is clarity on how long things will take before the program and the project approvals happen. So both players are kept to a tight deadline and timeline in terms of approvals and disbursement of funding. Relating to that, the report specifically reflects on the capacity of provinces in the program, and alongside our program, we've developed a capacity building approach, which is being implemented to improve the capacity and understanding of provinces to approve rental housing projects. However, these projects are more complex than ownership projects and therefore require quite a bit of detailed capacity or specific knowledge. Apart from that, we add and we would put as an alternative recommendation that the program could be made a national program from a funding perspective, with funding disbursed from a national directly or through a national institution. This would allow the capacity for rental housing to be dedicated and focused, and ensuring that the projects that are delivered are sustainable. And the provinces, as a result, can then concentrate on the other housing programs, which are largely ownership programs. The next recommendation related to the regulator, the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, or the SHRA, and the intersectoral coordination. Upfront, the SHRA, in terms of the Social Housing Act, was established to focus on the regulation of the social housing sector to regulate and protect government investment in rental housing. In terms of both the Social Housing Act and the Rental Housing Act, national government should ensure that all spheres of government and other government departments are aligned to enable and support the development of rental housing and or social housing. at this stage and in terms of intergovernmental arrangements and relationships, the Department of Human Settlements is best positioned to fill its role rather than putting the role onto the SHRA, and the SHRA would be able to focus on its main purpose, which is regulation. On the last recommendation raised relating to the income bans, firstly, to state up front, the institutional subsidy qualifying criteria does not apply in the social housing program. The criteria there has been modified to accommodate the situation. There are, however, requirements in both programs to ensure that government's investment does benefit the targeted income group, which is the groups below 3,500 Rand a month up to about 1,500 Rand a month. And this is done through a cross-subsidization process with middle and higher income groups. So we want to ensure the program targets who it's supposed to target. Some social housing developments, in the absence of the SHRA, would like to still utilize the institutional subsidy and not the social housing restructuring capital grant, as the criteria is less onerous and they bypass the regulation component. This will no longer be possible when the SHRA is established. Currently, also, the institutional subsidy allows for rent to buy and an ownership component, which the other rental programs don't allow. Should the income bans be changed, individuals would get access to an ownership product of higher value than in other subsidy ownership programs. So we would create an inconsistency among the programs that are offered in ownership and rental if we change the income bans for the institutional subsidy as is requested. In conclusion, Chair, the rental housing program is quite different to the ownership program as it focuses on the sustainable management of stock post-development. Human Settlements Department acknowledges that there is a great demand and need for affordable rental housing, and as such has a national rental housing strategy that is focused to respond on this through, on the one hand, scaling up the delivery of rental housing, and secondly, ensuring accessibility for low-income groups through the strategy. Currently, the scale of this program and housing in general is probably limited by the current funding environment, and it limits the extent to which investment in rental housing is possible. Chair, those are our responses to the FFC report and recommendations on rental housing.
Thank you to the department. Housing gives our people dignity. Honourable members, there's a presentation. Honourable Nguni, there's time for questions.
Thanks, Chair. I'll leave my questions just to two chapters. Because of time and other issues. My first question, Chair, is that though the FFC pointed out on rental housing, but I think the department is aware that infrastructure development, public infrastructure development, is key as well. Infrastructure development, especially sewages, you know, water pipes, sewages. From time to time, you find that in the townships, especially, you know, there's overflow of sewage because of the size of the pipes that are put in there. Has the department take into consideration if they do develop the rental stock, where is it going to be as far as infrastructure is concerned? And as far as, because it's going to cater for the low-income class people or the poor people, why is it going to be situated so that they don't have to spend money again to travel to places of work and schools, stuff like that? Just those two questions, Chairperson.
Anyone else? Honourable Lees? Are there any other hands?
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Through you, the concept of rental housing assumes that there's a rental payment greater or lesser or perhaps in some cases nil. Now, you're suggesting that there should be a national function, the rental housing scheme, rather than provincial. Can you just clarify for me the question of collecting rentals? I mean, is all the rental stock free, or are there rentals? And if there are rentals, how one over a 20, 30-year period is going to control the collection of that rental?
Honourable Mashehu.
Thank you, Chairperson, there's something I don't understand when it comes to this restructuring zones. Because if I can understand where housing comes in with the land issue, it has to do with the Development Facilitation Act, where you talk about fast-tracking the transfer of agricultural land so that in order to turn it into residential areas. But where my constituency is, that act is being implemented through tribunal courts, and the land is as a result, the act is as a result, it has a lot of loopholes where actually that land which is supposed to be housing, which is supposed to be used for human settlement for the disadvantaged, as the intention is, end up building houses within the big farms, which are in turn called holiday houses instead of human settlement for the disadvantaged. They are there, the act is being used, and somehow I think housing comes in because it's for the disadvantaged, but the houses end up being holiday houses which are used at certain times for those rich people when they come to those beautiful farming areas. Thank you. Yes. In the absence of the lockdown, using the act, I'd like to know how you come into it and how you can stop it.
Abraham?
Chair, I would like to know what the processes are that have been put in place for the maintenance of rental housing stock. Because human beings being what they are, if something does not belong to them, the level of care and maintenance, in many instances, some people would look after it, but in many instances, would deteriorate. If we could get a sense of what of consideration that has been given to that, and whether the cost factor of maintenance would not be lowered if the rental stock could, over a period of time, become the property of the person, the lessee. Secondly, Chair, with regard to housing on farms, what sort of measures are in place to assist farmers to provide a better housing for their employees? And finally, Chair, I think this morning's Cape Times, I merely saw the posters. I haven't read the article. Talks to the fact that there's 2 billion rand that has gone to waste or astray with the development of the M2 gateway. Now, I say upfront, Chair, that I've merely seen the posters on the lampposts and not the article itself. Perhaps you could be given a sense of that. Thank you, Chair.
It was in the 6 o'clock news on radio as well. I noted all the Sigourney and all the Mashiri.
Chairperson, what I'm understanding from the department is that they agree with FFC on the that there is more housing that's needed in the form of a rental stock. But now, what I argued about right at the beginning, Chairperson, still comes in the fore, that more housing will replace a lot of demand on water services and in the area. As I think the mandate of the department has changed now, that they must look at this, the human settlement holistically, and not just simply to provide the houses and then somebody else will have to battle to supply water or sanitation or sports fields or whatever, all sorts of things. Now, the question that arises is, as they agree that they need to scale up rental housing, and then don't they see any hindrances in relation to the provision, the provision of other services? What is there that's going to be done? How are they actually integrating the rate at which they want to deliver rentals, rental stock as opposed to the rate of providing other services that will actually make the whole settlement complete? Because you have all these service agreements, as we have heard, that you may need to put up that rental stock just outside Johannesburg Metro, but you may have challenges that the water is not available. How are they going to actually go around that? And the other thing is, what I've heard is that they want the national to be in charge of the rental stock. And when many arguments and debates have been that the housing subsidy schemes that are being held at the provincial level are really posing problems to municipalities. Councillors are being chased around for not delivering houses, whereas it is not in their power to actually approve and actually provide those houses. And we are debating that that function also must be devolved to local government. And now it looks like they're taking a sharp opposite. How are they actually integrating that and not undermining the what we usually say, that communities must actually inform the kind of development that goes within their areas? Because if this responsibility goes to national, that means, you know, the weight or the inputs of communities may be undermined, because decisions may be taken not in line with what communities want at that particular area. Thanks.
Right. This one is relevant to both water affairs and human settlements. So when they come back, they can bring the answer. Chair, you have now the new Department of Rural Development. And from what one sees in the press, they've already embarked on creating little villages and taking over certain failed projects and creating human settlements on them. That is what they say. I would like to know from the Department of Human Settlements whether there's synergy currently between them and the Department of Rural Development. Because on the one hand, you have little towns dotted throughout our country with major informal settlements at the periphery of those towns. And now we are trying to create new little towns or little villages. And that has an impact on water delivery. And we heard yesterday, for example, Chair, that it would cost, in certain instances, about a quarter billion rand to bring water to certain existing settlements. So are we not perhaps shooting ourselves in the foot that we rather resuscitate existing towns by creating a further better class human settlement programs than to create totally new ones in areas where we will have to find excessive amounts of money to get infrastructure in those areas. So I want to know from both departments, Chair, of course them not today, whether there's synergy in the developmental plans that they have with regard to human settlements and to provide infrastructure like water, sanitation, and that sort of stuff. Thank you, Chair.
They might say yes, but we want to know how they do it.
Thank you, Chair. No, Chair, it's a pity that the FSC comes at its own time, the response comes differently. Maybe next year,
we should design these things such that maybe they present us one chapter a day so that there can be a proper response, an engagement, a proper engagement. Because now we're not really getting the benefit of what we suspect, what we want to achieve. This chair, DRH, with any new terms, we're not in that section, we don't really understand. FSC's impression or submission is such that you have designed them, but those people, you should allow as well, those people who might want to develop outside them, the opportunity to do that, and so that those people who are entitled, the beneficiaries who are entitled to subsidies, can access those subsidies, should not necessarily be deprived. Now, we see your submission here, but we're not sure if it really addresses what FSC is saying, but because they believe that there is an opportunity for allowing developers to develop outside this DRZ. So my understanding is very limited, you know, of this DRZ. Are the areas that perhaps are designed by government to develop this human settlement or housing by government? What about the private sector? Because, I mean, it is policy of government that private sector must be involved in the development of housing. And I'm saying if my understanding is correct, that maybe this DRZ are government, what you call the subsidized areas or what. So how do we involve then the private sector to assist us to do this, to deliver housing? Number two, during apartheid times, we see the hostels, which were mainly your rental, what you call a kind of a rental stock, you know. I think mainly your four-room houses now that have been given to owners. It's fine. And clearly, my concern is in the housing department, is there someone who sits there, who comes from the rural areas, who can at least infuse a rural, what you call a perspective, in the whole thing? Because what we're talking about people who want to come to Cape Town, to Johannesburg, to Durban, and so forth. What about someone who wants to go to Kosinvaba, for instance, but who is not born there, all over? Where do you, what you call, how do you house that person? Where is the police of that person? Last time, Chair, this committee, the Committee on Finance, went to Leeuwarden, and the people there were saying, we also want to have access to RPP. They've got huge, what you call, the homesteads there. Now we asked them, you've got this big, what you call, our homes are called crawls, the white people's homes are called the homes. That is a difference. So they've got this, whatever you call it, you know, this homestead, that is big there. But they want to have access to RPPs. Now we ask them, do you want to destroy all these houses that you have? So a government must build you a small, what you call, an RPP house. They say, no, we do want it to have the RPP house within the premises. But it will be for keeping our stock, you know. But it is, yeah, it will be for like a fowl, what you call, a run or something. But like a storeroom, you know. That's what they want it for. But they don't want it really to be a house. They've got much, much bigger houses there. So the question is really, it's back to the question that I asked earlier, that in the housing there department, is there someone who really say South Africa is not a monolithic, what you call it, a country? There are rural areas, there are housing. What do we do about the a rural strategy? Unfortunately, DPG, you know that debate in the past FFC had made a recommendation around this was engagement, but as soon as the recommendation is not repeated, the debate seems to subside and be forgotten. So what is happening with the rural housing strategy so that you can house those people in their own article, rather than building a small RPC house, but you give them the 55,000 and what, and find a way of managing it such that a person, the rural people, can as well access these houses. Otherwise, they will say, this freedom, or they ask the question that I see in the advert, are you free or are you dumb? So they will ask us those questions. Thank you.
That's now very straightforward. Just some thought for the future. When you do planning and assist municipalities with planning of housing development, think about erecting the playground in the middle and build the houses around that. Because when the people moves in, the children's got a place to go and play and don't run in the streets and get knocked over by fast cars. Because that's what's happening in the Northern Cape, in Kimberley, especially Shaw City. Maybe you've heard about Shaw City. They call it the Lost City, the people living there. We must change their minds. It's actually the branch where to I belong, Brown Fisher Branch. But think about spatial development. Start with a playground. When the people moves into their houses, the children moves in as well, but they've got somewhere to go and play. Now they've got nothing. And we must write letters to departments begging them to start, like sport and recreation, etc., to go and develop facilities. It's just a simple thought.
Thanks, Chair. I am actually going to request that we respond so that we don't lose most of these questions and inputs. I think if I start with the last one, we're going to share the responses. I will choose, I will deal with the first that I can deal with, and then ask my colleague, and then I'll come back later if there is anything left unresolved. I note the proposal in the chair. I think that design I have seen in some of the social housing programs, it's exactly like that. You would see these multi-story units with grass provided for playgrounds, etc., in between. And I think, Chair, it's not excluded. It's usually a problem of design by the people at the municipal and provincial level that sometimes fail us because they may provide this at a particular. I think it's a design issue. I will take it up so that it is considered how we can infuse in the norms and standards a process of ensuring that those things are dealt with in that manner. There's always a temptation to say how many households per square meter to cover a particular those kinds of social services that are provided. But certainly, I think it's something that I think we may have to give dedicated and particular attention in the regulations that we will provide to provinces. I am certain that the people you are talking about who want the government to spend money in that rural area for them to use the house for packing things is unlikely to qualify for our program for access to our program. Generally, is income based. It's means based. We have a policy, a rural housing policy, which is emanated, if you remember, after the previous Minister of Housing had two or three rural housing endeavors, which I think was largely attended by all of those key players in rural areas, including the traditional leadership. The reality in that, I think we had to deal with a number of things.
Sometimes some of these are remotely located. You have to deal with the other things that rural people require, because some of them, most cases, they are involved in semi-agriculture or full agricultural activities, and therefore the priorities are quite services and activities are more priority to than housing. In fact, as you have said, in most of those cases, the houses that are already there are much better, bigger than the what we provide with the subsidy itself, and therefore we would be actually reducing the situation in those cases if we were to get it. But I think where there are requirements for housing to be provided, the policy out of the discussions clearly outlines that it is not necessarily an RDP type, this Lokshin type of housing that we are providing. You have to provide something that is appropriate for rural for rural setup. Your own there's proper designs that are appropriate there. I won't dwell into the policy itself, but it does exist. And maybe at the time when we have to deal with it, we'll be able to deal with it. My colleague will deal with the issue of the restructuring zones and the intention by government. And I think the inputs of the committee will be taken with regard to some of the issues that I've made. But I think we need to we will provide the explanation as to what is the approach at the development of the policy in relationship to the other programs that are provided. Because I think we just zoned in on what the discussion is about, and therefore it does leave out what are the other provisions that complement this should when the choice is made. Chair, we will realize that given that we've got the rural policy and in the current cycle of government, there have been a reconfiguration of some departments. There are discussions underway to ensure that we develop strategies that complement one another. Rural development is one of those. Water affairs is one of those departments, and various others. Our minister will be putting together a document that starts to say what is the manner in which we should be putting all of these mandates together in a manner that ensures that we avoid the past problems of lack of coordination of the planning processes, particularly. In fact, we have been asked to look at all the projects that have been implemented, for example, nationally, to then take each project and say, rural housing, what is the rural project, if it's urban, what are the departments that are required, and what are the other things to complement all the services that will be required, so that when these projects are delivered, there is coordination with regard to their implementation. I think the presentation with regard to the proposal on the funding arrangements with regard to the rental housing do not suggest that we will take the management of the rental stock to be a competent function of the national department, because that way the program as it stands at the moment provides funding which then is packaged and co-funded with us with the partners that we under. For example, the current holders of the stock in most cases would be entities set up by local government or by a province for public interest purposes. they hold the stores, they're called social housing institutions. We would fund those social housing in accordance with the program, and then they will raise capital to deal with the balance of the cost of construction of those units. In the modeling, we assess their capability to manage it, to manage the stock, and that takes a range of things, including the capability to understand the long-term planning for rental stock, because rental stock, by definition, requires that you have, at an investment stage, you must know what is going to happen 20 years, 30 years down the line when the stock becomes, when you have to replace, and therefore you should be able to start to create the necessary capital to meet that. That's one part. And the second part is the ability to maintain the stock and ensure that it is kept in good condition, also to ensure that it lasts longer, because stock that is not kept up well tends to deteriorate faster. So those are the kinds of things that are part of the program for assessing at the allocation stage. What we are proposing is that I think the criticism and the recommendation, therefore, seems to suggest that it takes a bit long to deal with these things, the funding flow, etc. In order to shorten it, we are saying maybe we could look at the option of ensuring that once the allocation is done to the national, then it flows straight to the point where the construction takes place, so that you avoid all of these things and ensure that the payments are quick, and therefore the construction can then be accelerated, either through the national department or through an institution. Once the stock is finished and delivered, it's owned by an institution that then is responsible for managing it for public interest purposes. Chair, let me allow my colleague to take the rest, and then I'll see if the other items have been dealt with as have been raised.
Thank you, Chair. With regards to the restructuring zones, the DRZs as they refer to, the whole rationale and thinking behind that is rental housing is only sustainable and viable if it's in the right location. In other words, a location where people want to rent, they are willing to pay the rent, and it's close to their work and other amenities and so on. So the starting point on the one hand for rental housing is that it must be in the right location to be sustainable and viable. The second thing is that we wanted to make sure if government is going to invest in rental housing that it stimulates the further development of rental housing by the private sector in areas where rental housing provision has either is not being provided or is being provided to a minimal extent. In most cases, your inner city areas where they have turned around and started to be taken over by slum landlords, with the introduction of social housing in those areas, the whole introduction turns around those areas and you get what is called the restructuring. Essentially, the social housing program currently does focus largely on the investment and involvement of private sector. It is focused on private rental housing as opposed to public, and it does ensure and get a synergy and cross-subsidization from the private sector. So there is in these rental programs, the one is a public program, the other one is a private program, and in the private one you're getting quite a lot of interest from the private sector to invest and be involved because of the way the program has been designed and structured. The next element then of the program is having it in the right location and making sure that government puts its energy, emphasis, and focuses its capacity in those locations rather than trying to spread the capacity and the focus across the country for all municipalities where the rental housing might not necessarily be the appropriate solution or need in those municipalities. So the designated restructuring zones allow you to focus and target. The zones are not decided by National. National has purely set the guidelines on what is required to be or to assign a designated restructuring zone. It requires all three spheres to debate and discuss exactly where these zones will be, starting and initiated by the local authorities, supported by the provinces, and then finally adopted and approved by National. It does draw on the existing zones that might be in a metro or an urban area, like inner city redevelopment zones and so on. It adopts those and draws on those zones as well. So largely it's to focus and target this program and to ensure that we are investing and developing rental housing in the areas where it's needed, but also getting a change and pulling in further investment from the private sector into those areas to complement the investment that government is making. The public program, which is the Community Residential Units Program, or CRU, can be developed anywhere. And that program is specifically for lower income groups, and it's rental for lower income, essentially. And any municipality, any province can initiate and develop a CRU project should they require one. And therefore, being in the zone or outside the zone, rental stock can still be developed and it can still be scaled up. It's just the two programs have different purposes. In terms of the integrated elements and having projects ready in the planning stage, I think 2 years ago we started identifying and developing a list or pipeline, as we call it, of rental housing projects. We've got a 3 to 5 year pipeline, which is growing and could almost be going to a 6 or 7 year pipeline of projects that are proposed for rental housing in the urban and metro areas. That pipeline, whilst it started with a whole lot of projects that were at the concept phase, given that it's been in development over the last 2 years and going forward for the next 5 years, it identifies exactly what each of those projects need to be able to deliver the rental stock. So you have a category of projects that can deliver rental stock this year and adhere to all the requirements, have all the integrated elements in place, water, electricity, everything is there. You know exactly which projects will be ready next year in terms of the planning cycle, the following year and the following year. And those that are in the outer years that require quite a bit of planning, alignment and coordination work, the work on getting those projects ready is actually happening in this current year so that we have the projects ready for next year and the following year and the alignment elements are in place. So the rental strategy has a 3 to 5 year pipeline that is consistently growing as the role players in the rental housing sector become familiar with the program. They bring more and more projects on an ongoing basis to put on that pipeline. The second element with regards to integration is that rental housing is mostly in existing areas and settlements in inner city areas where there is infrastructure already. So that's another element that facilitates that rental housing can be delivered at scale. It's really accessing buildings and land for rental housing that would be an initial hindrance. But the pipeline that we're working on takes care of that element. Then a key question on the collection of rents. As I indicated up front, the critical success factor for rental housing is the management of the stock and the management over the lifetime of that stock, which would be 20 to 30 years, even longer. The rental housing program is run through institutions that manage the rental stock. So our key focus and energy goes into making sure that these entities are able to manage the stock and have systems, procedures, processes for decision-making and so on that enables them to manage the rental stock. In social housing specifically, that's why the regulator is proposed. That regulator would regulate these management agents to make sure that none of their systems and procedures lapse so that rental is not paid at the end of the day, and they would literally regulate those entities and protect government investment as a result. The rental housing strategy as its starting point states that rental housing is about the payment of rent. It's definitely not free accommodation. Given the investment going into rental housing, the ongoing management and sustainability of that stock is dependent on people paying rent. So it's most definitely not free housing, and that is set and indicated right up front in the program. The second element that helps with the regulation of the rentals and the relationship between the management agent and the tenants is, of course, set in the Rental Housing Act and the Rental Housing Tribunal, and that relationship for dealing with disputes when rentals are not paid and things are not going as they should. But we like to be proactive and step in before that stage to make sure that the management agent that is managing the stock is able to do the job properly rather than having to deal with the process after at a tribunal. Then in terms of maintenance, the typical maintenance cycle for a new building is that in your initial years, your maintenance is very low. And as the building gets older and older, noting that we're talking about medium to high density buildings here, the maintenance costs increase. So the maintenance currently upfront, there is a provision in the way that the funding is provided to the projects. And then the balance of the maintenance requirements need to be recovered and recouped from the rental that is charged. There is a point in the lifespan of the building when any loans to private sector are paid off, and that component of the loan, which is in the rental, becomes additional money that can be used for maintenance. And usually at that stage, institutions build up a reserve fund specifically for the maintenance of those buildings. Essentially, what I'm saying is that up to 10 years, the maintenance would be in the rent, and then a reserve would be built up, and following that, going on for the rest of the life of the building, maintenance would be have to be done every 5 years in a five-year cycle. So the maintenance element never goes away. It's just where the cost of it is carried. Should the person become the owner, essentially he has to carry the cost of the maintenance. And usually when you're the owner, you let things slide. You don't necessarily always do the maintenance. And in a multi-story building, that is a problem. Because if one owner doesn't do maintenance and another one does, then it affects the entire building. So it's quite important, and it is built into the rental, the whole maintenance cycle and maintenance planning. And it's one of the things we check up front before we even begin to fund a rental housing project.
I'll take the next few, the more sensitive one. I haven't seen this poster for the Sunday Times. With Cape Times. Yeah, okay. We'll have to look at it. But secondly, I think if it makes reference to 2 billion lost, certainly it's off the point. Certainly, we are just about that amount. We haven't reached 2 billion yet on the N2. Secondly, if it relates to the discussions yesterday at SCOPA, they definitely didn't read everything that was there in particular, because there were specific issues that were raised which were explained, which I'm certain will be dealt with regard to processes and procedures for the development of that, including the issues of quality in some of the units and not all the units that were constructed. And the processes that were put in place to ask those construction companies to snag, to snag listing and improvements. Chair, I think that matter, to the extent that there are those issues that have been raised, I think SCOPA is able to deal with it. But Chair, I think the N2 has attracted negative attention for various reasons, and most of that ignores some of the good things that have happened. And certainly, if you go down towards the airport, you can see there is a difference between the areas that have been constructed and the areas still to be constructed, which were delayed through the court processes and all those which have now been dealt with. And in that regard, I can state that there has been considerable good value for money that has been derived. I am not saying there were no problems as identified. They were, and they are being dealt with appropriately. I'll come back to that one. There is the issue of services, and I think that question, I'm sure, is going to be applicable to all of the departments that will be coming to this committee. I would presume that when we deal with the MTBBS and probably the finalization of the DORA, we'll be able to come to deal with some of those, because they are part of the discussions to be had. Certainly, in our submissions, among the risks we are raising with Treasury, is the issue of bulk, for an example, the service, the funding, the backlog that needs to be dealt with and addressed if we are to deal with an accelerate housing development. The fortunate thing with rental as it is that because of the targeting that is provided for, in the rental program. In most cases, those areas already have services and bulk. I think if the question is about pressure, I think that is a risk that always exists, but it is part of the pre-construction, pre-approval assessment that is done. Certainly the risk of bulk, and I think I heard what I was talking about it before, I think remains a challenge that we will be dealing with going forward. We do believe that in this cycle of allocation and budget consideration, I think considerable investment needs to be done, to be made on provision of bulk, because it is a risk for that can mitigate against delivery of some of these key important services going forward. We have developed a farm worker housing program, which I think, given the opportunity, we'll be able to present to the committee. It's seeking to deal with some of the issues about farm workers' housing requirements. And I think it is one of the things that we currently now are going to be engaging on, because there are still areas that need to be resolved with regard to some of the legal issues relating to farm dwellers and farmers that we will be dealing with the rural development department to seek to and the department that deals with agriculture to seek to find solutions to them. But the program exists and it allows the space for the provision of housing for the farm dwellers where the according to the way the program is structured. But I think there are still issues of ownership which the experts would be able to provide to the committee when the program is dealt with. That needs to be dealt with regard to that. Okay, Chair, if there is anything I can be reminded by the committee.
Is this department part of the discussions when agriculture discuss housing on farms for farm workers with commercial farmers? Are you part of that meeting?
In the discussions?
Yes.
It's implemented at the provincial level. Certainly we provinces are expected to have that discussion, to be part of the discussion.
Do you monitor if it's taking place?
No, not in all cases.
I think you have to do it. Because when we do our oversight in our constituencies and we come across it, we report it to the Department of Labor and to the Legal Aid Board. I've got the situation now in my own constituency, in Schubertsfontein.
Yeah.
It's a serious one, very serious one.
In?
Schubertsfontein. You won't know where it is, I'll invite you there. You can look at the flowers in the Makwa. Jefferson, I think what you have raised is very important. I think they should understand that in most of the farms, when you go there, you'll see about 15 lonely standing houses. There is no playground, there is no school, there is nothing. It's just houses standing in the middle of nowhere. And I don't think it is in the spirit that we want to see, because housing at farms, the way we are seeing it, will actually be creating new villages. And then all other amenities will definitely need to be accommodated. And if the National Department is not necessarily aware of what is happening at the provincial level, surely it will create a problem, because the provinces are only dispensing that amount of money that has been made available from provincial level for housing. If it is only to provide those units, then they'll just simply build those units standing there like rocks for people to sleep in there. And the other one is
I'm a little bit worried that the National Department is telling us that for rental housing, there is no need to worry about other services like water, sanitation, because they believe that that infrastructure is already there. One just wants to warn them that a water purification plant will be built for a certain number of people. And if you bring more people, you are bringing more demand. And you may just simply outstrip the capacity of the plant. And exactly the same with the sewage, exactly the same with services of the municipality in terms of refuse removal, exactly the same as electricity. Electricity substations can only carry a certain number of people or number of demands for electricity. And if you bring more people, then you need more capacity in the substation to actually supply that. And surely this understanding that providing rental housing in urban areas, and then it should not worry them with services. I think it's a wrong understanding, a totally wrong understanding. But that's why we are having a problem that, if more people are taken to urban areas with these high-rise buildings, and then our shacks and whatever slum, then they run out of electricity. And when it rains, electricity trips because people are overloading the provision of services. I think they must have a different view, that providing that rental stock, it must go along and have correct consciousness that even services must be provided where there must be upgrades. Then the upgrade must be done for that particular service to carry the new rental housing accommodation. Thanks, Mr. President.
We must just look at our time, Honorable Abram, and then you can respond.
I would ask the department to send us in writing what their interaction policy is with the new Department of Rural Development, because that has not been responded to. We would like to know exactly how are they going to work with them and what sort of processes are in place, because they are already busy planning new settlements. That's the Department of Rural Development. We would like to know that. And finally, Chair, just a comment, and that is that our aim, Chair, should be to work towards a property-owning democracy. Thank you, Chair.
Well said.
Chair, I wanted just to add on these houses and farms. You find mostly they're built just near the river. Why can't they get the inspector to check first for the health issues, whether those places where they are located as is safer, mostly the farms near the river, near the valley, something of the sort.
I think you can respond, and then we will wrap up.
Member Sigourney. Sorry, Chair. Comrade Mashiva is saying, I'm just worried about the response, some of the response of the department. It seems to be very dismissive. Now this thing, if you go outside, there's policy for this. Very dismissive, what you call a kind of approach. And I can tell you next year, we'll still be sitting with this problem. For now, the way you are approaching it, like I say, I think Conrad Mashiva did pick that, how dismissive these things are. And what FSC deals with are research, what you call it, is the research that they come up with. And if we dismiss these things like the way we do, we'll come back next year, there will be time for oversight. We'll still, what you call it, ask you on some of these issues that today you're dismissing as non-existent because of policy, very easy policy that is existing there. I'm very worried, Secretary. Thank you.
Department respond. I received a note. Is here a person with the surname of Cullen in this meeting? No. Please proceed.
Thank you very much, sir. I undertake that we will provide a written response with regard to to that issue of the interaction with rural development. Chair, I think I apologize if we've created an impression that we're dismissing things. Maybe the constraint is the detail that we can provide with regard to each of those issues. As I did indicate, I think, for an example, in my response with regard to the issue of services as a result of the implementation of the rental program, I made the statement that says, started with on the basis that, fortunately, in most cases, these rental housing programs are largely inner city, and in the process of assessing the pre-construction and pre-approval of these things, consideration is given as to the implications, for example, on the pressures for future services, etc. And those considerations are done with the local government that makes the application or that passes some of these things. And in that regard, Chair, I made reference to the issue of the challenge of bulk in general. Be that as it may, bulk is generally a problem, even without these. And to a larger point, I think we rely on that process so that it is part of the approval. If the services are not, if there's going to be pressure on the services, then consideration has to be given as to how the services will be improved, the plant will be improved upon to ensure that it can carry the capacity and not cause problems. I think currently we know that in some cases some of our developments have actually done put pressure on some of the municipalities. That's largely because, to in our assessment, very little attention has been given to investing in the bulk rather than in the development of housing, because the development of housing has been based on the demand that exists. In fact, we've not been able to keep pace with the development. So I think they both complement each other. I think I take note of this particular issue of location and some of the problems with regard to from location, from housing location, and I think those things will then need to be, we will take it up with the people who provide, who develop our policy to ensure that some of these things can be addressed in a manner that ensures that there aren't health, I think in some of these cases I would presume there would be possible health hazards and problems, and in that regard I think somebody might be breaking the law. And to a large extent, it might be an issue of enforcement that we would need to deal with. But I'll take it up with the policy people. Thank you very much. Maybe in the response we can begin to respond to it as well when we provide the information on rural development. I think with regard to I wasn't particularly sure what the actual question of this DSA is, but if it relates to the issue of land. Chair, I just wanted to remind the committee, to inform the committee that having gone through some of the problems that we were seeing with municipalities disposing land inappropriately, etc., the department and the national legislature passed an act that established the Housing Development Agency, whose main mandate is to deal with these issues of land, land acquisition, and effectively then making it compulsory for the municipalities for the HA to have the ability to ensure that land is assembled appropriately through it for development rather than some of the uses that were made. But housing is generally a priority. Provision for housing is generally a priority with all of the other human segment requirements, therefore would be implemented. And we believe that the properly functioning the HDA should begin to arrest some of those those issues and be able to ensure that we don't get those. I think to the extent that private sector people have already acquired the land, it might be a bit difficult to deal with that. But I think with regard to the municipal disposals, we want to arrest it appropriately, ensure that at least land, well-located land, is prioritized for the poor people first before the other uses such as your golf estates and related issues. Thanks.
Thank you for the department, honorable members. You covered your questions. It looks like it in agreement, and we thank the department for coming to the presence. Yeah, no, we will, yeah. But we carry on. We release the department. They can sit if they want to listen to the other department, otherwise they can leave. Thank you again for coming, and then we'll take agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. Honorable members can stretch their legs while they set the equipment up. Thank you. I just want to make a note.
Can you help me with some of these delicate legs? From the Lord, do you think you have this leg? The guy with the dreadlocks, could he help? Because I can ask him.
Okay.
I just, yeah.
Welcome. Can you please introduce yourself? We'll give you 15 minutes, 10 to 15, to do your presentation. Please focus on the FFC's recommendation
regarding agriculture, said, you can, in the Honorable Mashile.
But Chairperson, I'm not sure whether maybe it's a mistake within our own system that I received this today and now. Yes, if it is not our own internal systems, it's external systems within the department, one still needs to send the correct message that we need to receive these things in time. Because the main aim is for us to be able to assist them. But if they don't provide us with an opportunity to be properly informed in this document to help them, then we can't help them. And then, thanks, Chairperson.
Honorable Mashile, you captured what I wanted to say, because since Wednesday we experienced this problem that we get the documents the day the meeting convenes, and it makes it very difficult for us to do a thorough study of this. Who's going to lead the discussion?
Yes.
What's the position of your DG, etc.? Apologies, written apologies. You've heard what we dealt with. To the other departments.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chairperson. I think we have received the apology from our acting director, Dr. Moshibuti Rampedi, just given to you this morning. Yeah. My name is Andile Maxwell Halls. I'm the DDG Production and Resource Management in the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. I've got the company of Mr. Msomi, Bonga Msomi, who is the chief director in the land use management, is sitting there. And also next to me is Mr. Baeti, chief director, CAS. Both gentlemen, we brought them here because the CFO is also attending SCOPA meeting today, who was supposed to lead us in the. So on that score, I'll request Mr. Baeti, because he's the person who's been leading on DORA issues and also the completion of the responses. So I'll hand over to him to give. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you, DDG. Thank you, Chair. I'll go through the presentation. I don't know what I'm saying. I'll go through the presentation as alluded by my DDG. Chairperson, honorable members, you will note that in our presentation, we have made comments from the FFC document, DORA review of 2010-2011, and we've looked at the areas, mainly the areas that touches the department at most, which is chapter 1, 2, and 3. But Chairperson, allow us to make some introductory background to these comments. Firstly, one of the background that I'll put here is that to remind you or to show you the conditional grants that we have in the Department of Agriculture, Forests and Fisheries, which are comprehensive support program, CAP, which is DORA Schedule 4 conditional grant, and it is aimed at supporting post-settlement, doing post-settlement support. And the second grant is Land Care, which is a Schedule 5 grant, and it's mainly aimed to do the natural resources management. And the third one is Lima Letsima, a DORA Schedule 5 grant for mechanization and production inputs. And the last one is disasters. Those are the grants that we have separately within the Department of Agriculture. Generally, the objectives of these grants are to enhance long-term sustainability and economic viability, to enhance national and household food security, to preserve and manage our natural resources, to generate employment opportunities, to improve farming efficiency, and reduce poverty. We feel, Chairperson, that these objectives of these grants are still very relevant and play a bigger role. Economists in these days are telling us that globally, we agree with them that globally, financial and food crises are much more mitigated within this sector of agriculture than any more, any other places. And this is in line with the Maputo Declaration that says that governments that say that governments have to commit themselves to allocate at least 10% of their national budget to agriculture. And this view is also now in line with the South African government priority, which talks to those matters that are highlighted there, which we highlight mainly that one of creating decent jobs, decent work, and sustainable livelihoods, rural development, food security, and land reform. We feel that this, together with the objectives of this grant, still needs to play a role grant being funded and increase their funding more. If you see there in the objectives of South Africa not having reached the objectives of South Africa not having reached the status quo, being that in 2005-2006, insofar as the percentage of the budget to agriculture is 3%, and it has dropped in 2007-08 and 2008-09 to 2%, we would like to see a situation that is this funding to agriculture increasing. Mr. President and honorable members, I will go straight to our comments of the Department of Agriculture on the equitable share component of the FSC recommendation. Mr. President, we welcome the recommendation by FSC generally. We are saying again that whichever option is taken, if you see the provincial equitable share component there, that they have recommended a short option and a long option. And we say as a department that we'll be happy if the following are considered by the review as well. One being that in provinces, the amount of equitable share going to agriculture has not been growing. It is envisaged that this review will look at this and change the status quo. We are aware of the government priorities of health and education, but we feel that during this downturn, agriculture can play a role. Because that's where the economists are saying that that's the easiest approach to intervene in this downturn of the economy. The sector has been funding provincial mandates using the conditional grant. Even though DORA deals with natural disasters in the year, the sector would like to propose a review that incorporates this fund into the equitable share so that it is nearer to where it is supposed to be, where the disasters are happening in the provinces. The second component of our comment is on in respect to public infrastructure investment. We highlighted and picked all these chapters and our comments as our contribution to these areas. The DAF, which is the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries, welcomes this recommendation to increase the quantum of investment in public infrastructure and agrees that planning is very, very critical, really indeed, but particularly with the infrastructure program and project. We agree with the Commission that increased infrastructure funding should be linked to basic services like water, health, agriculture, transport, and in particular, agro-logistics in our case. We would insist that our infrastructure grants of CAF and land care in particular be increased to respond to the infrastructure needs of the emerging farmers. Baselines of agriculture in provinces are not improving, Chairperson, as I indicated before. Therefore, CAF is not necessarily, or CAF and even other grants are not necessarily supplementing those budgets on the ground. The idea of an infrastructure maintenance strategy proposed recommended by this recommendation is supported, as this will ensure sustainable jobs through our APWP-linked conditional grant, CAF and Landcare. The last comments we're making on the recommendation is the comments in respect of a social assistance grant. A recommendation to increase social grants during this economic downturn is welcome, Chairperson and honorable members. A need for coordination, linking social grants to food production data packs could be a long-term sustainable solution to this grant. Grants like CAF and APWP-linked support in agriculture contribute enormously in cushioning the poor from the increasing food prices. increase food production at local centers could reduce the risk of entitlement to the social assistance grants and dependence as well. Increasing food production through agriculture funding would lead to a number of benefits that accrue to rural development. I'll now go straight to as a reminder, honorable members, give you our allocations for 2010 to 2011, 2009, this MTF, the present MTF that we're in. We have this year running to 750 million nationally and allocated, as you would see, the honorable members. We have 862 million in the next financial year, which is 2010-2011, looked at within this with this recommendation. And on the outer year, on the last year, we have 979 million. This conditional grant, this amount for CASP, are not enough on a level check. As only these grants and persons are depending on to do agricultural activity on the ground. This is also land care. The same we have running in the running year, 61 million, 54 million in 2010, which is next year, and 57 million in 2011, 2012. These are estimates that we have received over the MTF from National Treasury. The last part, we recommend that our conditional grants, in conclusion, be consolidated in line with our previous recommendations that we have highlighted. The department is consolidating all grants into a single one, which is called CASP, as a Schedule 5 grant of DORA, in line with the FFC of 2006. That is a typo. That is 2006 FFC and concerns on the purification of conditional grants. And this is to ensure bigger and longer-term impacting conditional grants like infrastructure. And it will also improve monitoring and oversight as a result of this. And the illustration is following of what the department is recommending. The name of the grant, Comprehensive Assistance and Support Program, CAS, DORA Schedule 5. And its components will be the CAS and extension recovery, will be ILIMA LETSIMA and land care. That will be its component. And we're looking at this situation where now we are able to have a one-stop shop to make it a point that these grants are mostly received on the ground. They land on the ground. Because if you have another grant run there and decided and approved certain things, you can experience a lot of issues of double dipping and a lot of spreading the fund thinly than having the fund sitting on a one-stop shop approach. This is in conclusion, honorable members, in terms of what we have in this grant going forward in 2010 to 2011 as the recommendation. This is what we will be having in conclusion of all these grants that I've just highlighted, which is CAF, land care, ILIMA, LETSIMA. The total funding over the MTF is 2.2 billion, which is, we're saying it is not enough. And we've looked at the 2010-2011 of the provincial equitable share. We've seen that the funds that are going to be allocated in that financial year is 254 billion, which are going mostly on administration and salary. And it's having us over the MTF only 3.3 billion. I think by those words, thank you very much.
Thank you. I see the hands going up. Any other hands? Dr. Ali. I've got him. Any other hands? Do I miss someone?
In that order, you can start asking your questions.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, you know, last night on the 7 o'clock news, it was stated that the managing, the CEO of the Land Bank was quoted as saying that there are at least 1,500 farmers that are in difficulty with the Land Bank, and that approximately 350 farms are in the process of being repossessed or being sold on auction or whatever. And a significant number of those people are so-called emerging farmers. Now, Chairperson, the department in its presentation talks about expenditure, the trends, but they don't tell us anything about outcomes. You see, I come from a milieu where I believe that if I put a rand into something, I want to know what am I getting back. So we don't get that. They must tell us what the outcomes are of all these various programs. I may add, Chair, that some of these programs, you will find that at the end of the financial year, the departments have unspent funds, especially at provincial level. And you then find some last-minute expenditure, where in Kwakwa, for example, Chair, a planter was given to farmers. Believe me, Chair, it's so sophisticated that you'll need a BSc degree in agricultural engineering to make the planter work. It is not relevant to the needs of ordinary people. So, Chair, we want to know what are the outcomes of all these and achievements of all these expenditures that they speak of. Then, Chair, to what extent does the conditional grants that are administered by the department complement other poverty alleviation projects that are run by other departments and municipalities? And, Chair, what is absolutely important is to note that what happens is that when there is land restitution taking place, or in terms of some of the programs of the old Department of Land Affairs, the LRAT program, then, of course, the Department of Agriculture has to kick in to provide the necessary support. And I want to say that there's been a dismal failure in terms of providing support. Now, Chair, I would like to know that in terms of extension services, which is supposed to be some of the support that the department is supposed to provide, how many extension offices do they have in the country today? And whether those extension officers are adequately qualified to provide the necessary services. And what is the ratio of an extension officer to the number of farmers that the extension officer is supposed to assist? What is the department's intervention where there are these hundreds of farmers in the process of losing their land, in the process of being liquidated, as it were? What is the department's assistance there? Has the department taken any steps to assist with a rescue or, say, resuscitation plan to see that such people do not lose their land? And if they have done that, Chair, if they have made any input, and they must tell us whether the input that they are making is going to be a sustainable one, whether they have given thought to providing the kind of assistance that will in the long term keep those people on the land, and whether the fact that many people are currently facing legal woes, whether that impacts in any way towards the policy target of achieving 30% of all commercial agricultural land to be in the hands of emergent people by the year 2014, whether it is going to contribute to it. Finally, Chair, with regard to this report also, what they are telling us here today, they have provided us in their presentation only the expenditure and the performance of, well, expenditure performance, we don't know about the actual performance on the ground, of two of the grants, the CASP grant and the Landcare grant. Why are we not being given any information about disaster relief and about the Lima Lechima campaign? Because I may tell you also, Chair, that when it comes to disaster relief, we've seen it now with the drought in the Karoo. We've seen it also with veld fires that took place last year. People went through the correct channels, through the local departments of agriculture, assisted by the extension office. And the disaster relief comes 2 years later. Now, Chair, there's no point in giving you money when you're dead already. No point. So why is there such a lengthy period between the time that the disaster takes place, an application is made for assistance, and the payout? So, in short, Chair, I'm prompted to say that must we now provide more assistance and more funding for a dismal failure, because it is not reaching the people, the targeted people. They are not getting the necessary assistance in time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mokubela.
First, I'm having two questions. The other one is in connection with the budget, which 2.79 billion. And according to the statement, they are saying it reflects a decrease of 26.8. How can we assist? Because if you can tell us that no, you want or you budgeted for so much, you have received so much, and we're short of so much, then to indicate how can we assist in order to so that you can reach your goals. Number two is in connection with the consolidation of this program. You are saying, all right, what is the advantage of consolidating them and the disadvantage to leave them as they are?
Thank you, Honorable Robbie. Thank you, Chair. On page, I think it's on the page 10, Chairman, the amount of money allocated for the different provinces are given there. And Chairman, I'm perfectly aware of the fact that the provinces vary from each other. But I come from the Western Cape, and I'd like to know why the Western Cape is one of the, I think it's the province that exports most of the agricultural produce. Why was there only 3085 allocated to the Western Cape? Even Gauteng received more. And I'm perfectly aware of the fact that the Eastern Cape, Chairman, and KwaZulu-Natal has got the largest and the favor, it's got large populations. But I'd like to have clarity from the officials why only 3085 is the lowest amount of money from page 10 of your submission, sir.
Okay.
I don't know whether he's aware of that. Only 3085 was allocated to the Western Cape. I appreciate. I beg your pardon, what about the shop steward?
Correct, that's that, on a little bit better. How things in agricultural what you call a province, so that's why it's getting more.
I bet you did, Chairman. Thank you.
It is, might be somewhere on the outskirts.
Only
on the room of Mashile? Yeah, Chester said this. I think in the past few days as well, we also had to Comrade Sogon as well. You know, it's having that kind of worries, you know, that resembles a shop steward. So now we had a shop steward for Gauteng, now we're having a shop steward for Western Cape. I think also going back to the question that Makuvela have raised on the consolidation of grants, I think one aspect that you'll have different consequences of doing that is either we are creating a bureaucracy of actually getting work done on the ground, and a risk that if we had a sleeping head of that particular section, then we have all the grants locked up. I'm not sure whether trying to consolidate all the grants is considered to be an option rather than considering heightening the level of coordination, because coordination may be a problem that leads to thinking that consolidating all of them then will make life easier. And then the next one is in relation to the disaster funds. Looks like the department is happy that the disaster funds should go to equitable shares. And I'm sure we have been hearing since the beginning of this week that equitable shares, as they get in those pockets of the provinces, they get redirected to other issues rather than those that I'm not sure whether you are aware of that particular risk that you want to put the disaster funds into. And you can explain yourself to ourselves whether we are singing the same song. But Chair, the other one is at Bushbuck Ridge. There is something called Mavedi. I was told that it stands for Mavedi is Maruleng Bushbuck Ridge Economic Development Initiative. Chair, this particular initiative is receiving assistance from the Mpumalanga Department of Agriculture, so, and through the program of Masubuyele Masimini, they have received the tractors and but also extension officers, assistance from extension officers. The problem is when we visited the project, it doesn't look like a project that is funded. It just looks like any other project of farmers that are trying their best to try and make a living in the bush. But whereas there is input from the department and also the business trust, I think there are funds that are coming from the business trust that are being pumped into that particular project. But when you get there, you won't be convinced that they are having free tractors to plow, free seeds to plow, free manure to plow, and also free assistance from those that are appointed through the business trust to assist them. Now, I actually just want them to actually look at this particular thing so that we are having a correct outcomes out of it. And the other thing is that the tractors that have been supplied are tractors that are, you know, it's foreign models of tractors, and they are not able to repair them locally at site of work. When the tractor is broken, it takes 6 months or whatever to actually get spares to fix them. So it actually defeats the the objective. But then, Chair, I just want to also to ask the department to really revisit issues of conditional grants. How does conditional grants also relate to the expectations of our masses on the ground? My own perspective is that the conditional grant actually tends to undermine the needs of our people, because some other people somewhere, they decide that this is what we are going to do, it is funded, and then it's parachuted it down to the people. Now, how do we make the conditional, the outcomes of conditional grants be in line or talk to our communities as well, without parachuting projects and in the name of being done through the conditional grant? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Mashegu, Honorable Mashegu, and then Honorable Chani Nguni.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was very much concerned about the relationship of the department with the programs that are addressing poverty within the communities. But somehow, Honorable Mashegu has a little bit on it, which I think will cover what I was going to ask. And because this is another one, is that this is a new department, and it's come with it has given us a presentation, but you are not aware of their readiness, because looking back, they had a lot of unfinished businesses. So how ready is the department within the new mandate and within this budget ready to do their impact, looking into the recommendations of the FFC? Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, just a comment. I just need clarity. To me, having listened to all these departments, there seems to be a trend that when something is wrong or they can't get something right insofar as projects are concerned, they would not come up with ways and means of improving to make that project work. They would come and recommend something else, completely new. And when it does not work as well, they will abandon it and go to another thing. Now, that is just a comment and my observation. But I would like to be clarified on this whole thing of one-stop shop, in terms of the grant, trying to satisfy the...
Comrade Chan, why don't you do your first word, because a question, strengthen it so that they can respond clearly. I'm not sure, maybe they are clear, but...
The first one,
you just generalize and say you stop there, because I think they would like, they must respond to that question. But they must.
I'm coming to that. I'm trying to clarify. Okay. Yeah. But maybe I need a clarity first, because I'm not too sure of my understanding of what is exactly meant here in terms of proliferation of crime, which is something that has led to the department now wanting to combine all those grants into one thing. In my mind, I've got two meanings of what it could be that you, I don't know, that's why I want you to clarify me what is meant by proliferation of grants as a problem. And then I will follow up on a question on that. And then the other question is relating to the fact that the provinces keep their budget the same year in and year out, insofar as agriculture is concerned.
I'm sure there's been some interactions with the provinces with regard to that. Do you have any fact as to why there's no increase insofar as provincial budgets on agriculture are concerned? And lastly, I think it's been raised with other committees, your relationship with the provincial department on agriculture, particularly coordination of what they are doing at that particular level. Because I don't think it is the intention that the departments will be given money and that is only to distribute to provinces without following up on what is being done with those particular funds at a provincial level. You should be having some sort of authority and power over, particularly over the funds that are released from your own offices, I mean from your own coffers as a department to the provinces. You might not have much power maybe on what the province allocate, the treasury allocate to them in from the provincial coffers. Thanks.
Do you capture the question? Okay. Guni?
I think mine are similar to
Comrade. I think that the question, there was a clarity seeking question there, so that there should be a follow up. I think around the proliferation of grants, I think that comes from FFC that says there is a proliferation of grants. In other words, there are many small pockets of grants that have been done. Now, they would like, FFC is proposing consolidation, of which agriculture seems to be what you call being supportive of that. So I think maybe you can just, I'm not sure if you still want to follow up on that question.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I think now that I'm clarified. No, I want to check if, because to me, that does not solve the problem. You can do what you are doing now, but if at provincial level there are those multiple projects that they want to take, they will still receive the grants and allocate them according to those multi projects out of the very same grant that you are saying is one stop shop. So I really don't see it resolving the problem. It could be just saying it should not be done at the level of the department, but going down to implementation is still going to amount to the same thing, in my view. Maybe you'll have a different view on that. I don't know.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I think my question is quite similar to Honorable Abrams said, to say, on the outcomes. I just want to know how many previous disadvantaged individuals who are farmers today have been taken from non-starter position, poor position to commercial farmers today due to all these programs that you've got on the ground. And secondly, how much of these grants do end up being used by provinces or municipalities for other purposes at provincial level or municipal level that are not intended for the grant? Say a province might use that money not for the grant for that particular purpose, but for other pressing needs in the province. How much, in terms of percentage, how much money do you lose due to that? And lastly, Chairperson, also more than the same question, Donald Abrams. How much equipment or advices do you give to provinces or the department gives to individuals that actually help in improving the conditions of people on the ground? An example is that in the Free State, some farmers were given nguni cattle. And when you talk to the farmers, you find that those nguni cattle are not good for meat to take to the commercial market, because they say their structure, it's too small. They are just good for the hide, to sell the hide. And if a farmer sells the hide, he gets next to nothing, because they say, no, it's not viable. If you sell the hide, it just got a good hide to make car seats, but the farmer, at the end of the day, doesn't benefit because the value chain, it's not closer to the farmer, it's just somebody else who buys the hide and sells it or process it to
who gets the profit. So in short, how much or rather what type of information or service do you give to the farmers that at the end of the day improves the lives of the people?
Sikoni?
No, thank you, Chair. Maybe my first, what we call it, Chair, take would be that if the department fails at certain questions, they will have to respond to in writing. I think that we will allow that because I heard that there are certain detailed questions that need some detailed answers that may not be able to ask all now. But I think that the gist of the questions that I hear, the trend is saying that you want to be given more money, yet the output, which is reflected in the budget process. There was a slide which showed that your area slides. Now we showed that 2005-2006, there was about 3% of the budget that was allocated to agriculture. It went down to 2%. If you go to the TRIMA, for instance, our own what you call a research shows that committee research report shows that even the TRIMA was cut by 47%. There is no what you call what is the reason for government to cut this is very important what you call a program. Clearly, there can be only one reason, that they don't perform. And therefore, if they don't perform, the government will redirect those funds elsewhere. So I think that then the question comes from Comrade Chane there to say, and it's a question that we've been asking since Monday, this coordination, it seems to be missing somewhere. You give money to the province, you walk away, you come back, you want a result at the end. We went to, we go to provinces. We get these reports. In the Eastern Cape, for instance, there's also a provincial department of agriculture. But you know who performed those functions of CAF? It's the social development department. It starts small industries like your chicken farming, it deals with issues of fencing. The social development, what you call it, department. Clearly, it means that they are doing something illegal because they're not performing on their own mandate. So they decide to go outside. But I think the question remains the question that is being raised. That of coordination, that there's a problem with the coordination. And you can't give funds and walk away and expect that people will, what you call it, will perform. I mean, if you look at this land care, really, they're negligible, what you call it, or a very small, what you call it, grant. You should be exhausting them. But they underperform, small as they are. And there's so much need. Everyone from the rural areas is flocking to Cape Town, to the urban areas to create informal settlements because there's no proper support there for them to plant and do these things. So somewhere, we're missing the point. And we would have thought that as members, the department is investigating this thing. So it's better now in the Eastern Cape. I see your old tea plantations that were closed in the past, they are being reopened. Now there's a need. But there's more need for this CAF. It's not coming then. You know, issues that are raised of using foreign tractors and what that would stand then in case they break. But it's clear that clearly the response that we want from your side, is your coordination is not up to scratch. Where are we missing it? Thank you.
Added to that, Honorable Sikoni, is what monitoring mechanisms and performance monitoring do the department have in place? And you mentioned
improving monitoring and oversight on page 11. That is the point. The reason why I'm asking this, coming back to the first question about extension officers, who's checking them, what they are doing, to whom do they report? My constituency is in Namakwa. The nice part of Namakwa is you stay on the N7, it's a tarred road, but when you get off it, you're on gravel roads. And our experience with officials and departments is they don't want to go onto the gravel roads. That's a reality. That's a reality. So we call on the department to look at this, but not only look at this. We want an answer on this. How are you going to do it? Seeing what you are projecting in terms of your 5-year strategic plan and the recommendations of the FSC. Thank you. You can respond. Any other hands? Honorable Lees?
Mr. Chairman, my apologies for coming in late. I'm new to this game, and I'm battling a little bit with these kind of debates because my understanding is we have to respond to FSC, but then we go much further than that. And I'm now going to go a little bit further than that, just building on what's been said by other members. You know, the question of monitoring is absolutely vital. I mean, in my own constituency, which is Evenham Beattie Ladysmith in Newcastle, you know, there's a project there. It's a flagship project for the Department of Land Affairs, but agriculture was involved too. Funding was made available for cattle and so on, and then they were kind of abandoned. And now there's all sorts of disputes. And the real issue there is it's a communal project rather than a private ownership project. And agriculture needs to look very carefully at how they fund communal farming operations as opposed to individual farming operations. On the other hand, I have two, one Zulu-speaking and one Sotho-speaking friend who have totally gone their own way. When I said to them, why don't you guys access grant funding, they're saying it's just too much of a problem. And let me tell you that the Sotho-speaking friend who has a farm outside Harrismith, works for the Department of Agriculture. He's an employee of the provincial, and he says to me, oh, I cannot waste my time going through the process of trying to see. And he has bought a farm in Harrismith. He has stocked it with cattle. He's a successful commercial farmer. And my other friend in Ladysmith, same, he's bought a farm outside Ladysmith. He stocked his own farm. Not a cent of grant funding. And they're both successful farmers. Now, both of them, I've tried to assist with land bank loans. We failed there. And eventually the Ladysmith farmer has accessed commercial bank finance. So there's the issue of monitoring, but there's also an issue of accessibility, which really is a serious issue. If we're going to make commercial farming viable for emerging farmers, they have to have it, and then, of course, there's the support. Now, communal farming, in my view, is not a long-term solution to commercial farming. Communal farming must inevitably progress to proper commercial farming, and I understand there's a need for it in the interim. So, Mr. Chairman, I would really urge the Department of Agriculture then to perhaps not here, but I mean, we're having a much broader discussion now, and I apologize if I'm going off the core subject which we're here for, but as the monitoring, it's access to funding, it's access to support, and that's where our commercial farmers are going to come from. And it's just not happening at the moment. And I'm saying to you that one of my friend's clients is actually working for the Department of Agriculture, and he has just said, I'm not wasting my time. I'm doing it on my own, and he's doing it successfully. Thank you.
Yeah, Chair, what the Honorable Liz has raised, it really brings another factor, you know, in relation to the extension officers, where whether they are not running their own farming schemes instead of assisting farmers as employees. I think that is what they need to actually check. I'm sure maybe we should have a very serious debate with the department on extension officers. Because most of them, of course, as you have raised correctly, they are owning flashy cars now, and we expect them to be able to drive to the farms. But then, how does an extension officer go to a farm in a BMW 320? It's just not possible. It's the person that needs actually a high-rise, typical off-road vehicle. But that is being undermined, and it may be pointing in a certain direction that we are bargaining for something else with extension officers rather than the help that we expected to assist emerging farmers and local rural people. Thanks, Chairman.
Sorry, Chair. Just to give a little bit of a direction. In our members, I think the intention was to finish at 12:30. We could do that. But I think we ourselves because the department, we allow the department to present something that was not necessarily in the recommendation, and now something that we are interested in. But I keep on saying to people, there will be sufficient time when we deal with the medium-term budget policy statement. There will be where we can be able to go in details of this program. Because that time will be sufficient to deal with those kind of things. As I then, I'm saying to the department through the chairperson here, they must tell us what is it that they would want to respond to now. Maybe others, issues they may respond to in writing, because they are not necessarily relevant today in today's debate. Sure.
Agreed. You want to reply?
Chairperson, listening to all the comments that were made by the honorable members here, in my mind there's one song which is playing, do we know where we're going to? That's a question you're asking the department. Am I right? Because of that, because of the problems that we have highlighted, as a department, a certain policy decision that we took, the first one was that let's get our governance structures to be in place so that we can have proper communication and coordination in terms of policy interventions that we need to do. We've done that under the umbrella called LAP, Land and Agricultural, Land and Agricultural Reform Program. That approach, it promotes the integration of planning. I was listening to when you're talking to water affairs and housing. That plan, it accommodates everybody at the district level to say we need to have proper special planning in order for us to be able to properly utilize the resources that we have got, water, land, and other renewable resources which are now being depleted in order for us to be able to increase productivity in agriculture. That is the first step that we have done. But just to comment about integration of the manner in which we are doing, every department find it very difficult to talk to other departments. And that, but we are not going to sit back and we are trying all our best to ensure that in everything that we are doing, we are engaging every department. We've had discussion with SALGA, we've had discussion with Department of Social Service, we've had a discussion with Water Affairs, especially on the issues of pollution of water. So that principle is what is dominating our department. And then the second thing that we introduced, we said for any planning, we need to have one central planning. We call it an area-wide based planning within the district so that we'll be in a position to talk to all the resources that are in those areas. And we know exactly, we prioritize the projects that are going to ensure that we've got proper utilization of resources that are available. And another problem that we are facing as a national department in terms of implementation of our programs, the issue of prioritization of agriculture commodities is still a problem in South Africa. Everyone wants to do whatever he wants to do.
forgetting that we need to start doing things which are of priority in terms of market, in terms of job creation, and in terms of conservation of natural resources. So this process that we're in is giving us that opportunity to be able to move forward. So in our assessment in terms of the DORA funding that we have provided, we found our weaknesses. I think the first weakness that we found was that the quality of work that is done within the DORA programs and also the business plans that are being developed to support the projects that we identified are very poor. So what we are doing, we have developed a guideline on how this business plan, once we have one guideline to be done by all the provinces in terms of business plan writing, and we ensure that we within that business plan is doing. Like as I'm talking, we're busy, official finalize it next week. We're refining our program in terms of the outcomes. I think Honorable Abraham always tell us about these things that I agree with you. The issue of putting outcomes of this program has not been properly articulated in the manner in which we're doing our job as a department. But that is now our priority. We have decided that we're not going, the reason why we're bringing all these things under one point, we want to be sure that any business plan that comes our way, it funds focus areas and nothing else. If it's outside focus areas, how do we determine focus areas are those ultimate goals of the government in terms of conservation, sustainable land use and management, conservation of natural resources for future generation, capacity for the local communities and the farmers, and also the improvement of livelihood of communities, which in most cases, under land care, it comes as an employment creation to put those infrastructures that you want to do. And also the restoration of rural economy. The restoration of rural economy cannot take place if you don't put investment. That is why we're saying that what is being said now here, I think, Chairperson, we need to discuss the recommendations of the OFC further, because I could see that the manner in which they presented their recommendations, they were only focused on particular departments. But I feel that this must cover all the departments, because they are all integrated in terms of delivering the goals of the country, economic goals of the country. So I think maybe we'll engage you to find ways on how we could take this thing further, particularly the investment infrastructure. Agriculture, ever since I've been involved, since 1988, there has not been an investment in most of the infrastructure of agriculture, particularly research and development. Yet the other day, we're talking about research and development has collapsed. So unfortunately, it has not been highlighted. I think it has just been an oversight on our side. I feel that we need to consider research and development as part of the infrastructure, especially the assets that we've got all over the country, which are deteriorating. We need to ensure that people, I think, fortunately, our minister also made some commitments around that. And again, we want to ensure that everything that we are doing, it impacts to our policies. Coming back to your question of monitoring and evaluation, Chair, I think that is the area that will also tell us, are we really impacting? Like CAST, we have not done an assessment, I must accept. How do we say to the parliament that our programs are impacting if we have not done an assessment? I mean, it's almost 5 years now. But we are in the process of developing an assessment plan for MAFISA, for all these CAST projects, to ensure that next year and for the next five-year plan, it's going to be influenced by what the assessment that we're going to, by the factors that we're going to get out of that. And also, the coordination of services, it's a serious problem in all the provinces. Everyone is doing what he wants, and that's why we've got a wasteful of resources in terms of funding, because some people who are engaging in the services, they don't even have a clue what's happening, but they're being given services. That is the reason why we want to bring this under one point, because we know that once it's changed, we're going to set up the rules which will dictate on how we fund, and we'll only fund those areas which focus on issues that we are going to have impact on policies. And again, what the new government has recommended, this special planning, the centralized planning for the country, I think it must happen also with agriculture. We're saying we need to have that kind of approach, because if we can do that, it will help us to ensure that we become efficient and invest in areas where we're going to have an impact. And then the last thing that is also a problem. If you look at how we intend to deal with issues, we've got three tiers of government, national, provincial, and district municipalities. What we're saying as a national department, we don't want to get engaged in project implementation. province need to take control of problem remediation, but district municipality need to ensure that there is a project, proper project identification, which is going to lead to economic growth within those areas, and also project implementation on the ground. But there's a problem of capacity within the district municipality and even up to ward level. But what we are doing now, we're engaging community groups to become part and parcel of the planning of project identification, project implementation, because they do have capacity. Not all the community groups have got capacity in every district, but we're ensuring that we'll try to do that. So in order for us to be able to ensure that we've got a proper support for the emerging sector or the new farmers, the 2 years ago, we instituted a program of extension revitalization. The first phase was to recruit extension officers as it is needed by the province. So that at the present moment, I don't think we'll be in a position to respond to the ratio, because that extension service is elsewhere, but there is a research that has been done. We can provide it to the community to say these are the ratios in terms of extension. But I'll also agree with you, we have got a serious problem of capacity with the extension officers. It goes back to the type of education that we're getting. Our education is not focusing on the national focus in terms of agriculture. We are revisiting that, talking to the community. What are the issues within the agriculture? We don't have specialists. I mean, I was saying to some of my colleagues, we don't have specialists. They are gone. We don't have animal scientists in a true sense. We've got generalists. So that is the challenge that we're facing as Department of which, with this new review of the way we're doing it, we're addressing all those things. And what we're also doing, which is also going to address the issue of production. We have instituted since January a process of developing a production strategy, which will talk to commercial farmers, which will also talk to the smallholder farmers, and also the household farmers. Because it's crucial within the household farmers, if you still remember, the commission, I've just forgotten the person who did the commission in the 1960s, the name just flashes, where they segregated households and the plowing areas. They created a scenario which is not being addressed in agriculture. What we are doing through the Lisima process that we've been having in terms of awareness campaign, we're promoting for the communities to go back to plow those land. But what we're doing as a government, we're providing them the starter packs to plant those quota hectare plots, to start planting their maize. But next to their houses, we're also showing them the benefits of growing their own vegetables. And then the last question, last response, we have also, 2 years ago, it was 2006, we introduced what we call mentorship program. Today, this year, we're reviewing the process to see on how we could make province to be part and parcel of mentorship, because we started mentorship with the community groups. I think the good results we've got was with the Wood Growers Association. Most of the institutional structures in the rural areas, if you go there, you'll find that they've got infrastructure for sharing, they've got groups, the study groups in terms of that. But we want to take the thing further so that it can have a very good economic spin-off in terms of empowering the rural communities. Because all this process that we're trying to do, want to ensure that the communities right up to what level are being empowered. On the land care, we ensure that the program also builds up capacity within the community to maintain their own resources, to understand why they should maintain their resources so that they can have benefits for future. And then coming back to issues of foreign sectors, it's our concern. We've spoken to ARC because South Africa, we had a very good system which ensures that all these risk areas are catered for. But somewhere, somehow, somebody decided that we must do away with those things. We're trying to bring back those practices which made our country to be competitive. Foreign sectors, there was a clause in South Africa to say any tractor that is being imported needs to get clearance from ARC. But that facility is no longer there. So we're trying to bring back so that we can ensure that nobody is going to take an advantage of bringing tractors which are going to impact negatively on our production. I remember during the homeland era, we got tractors from Austria, we got tractors from Russia, now we're getting tractors from China. But we anticipate that in 2 years' time, all those practices are going to come to an end, because we're also developing as an attachment to production strategy. We say we cannot just go and buy tractors. I appreciate what you said. It's a tendency of people of liking procurement, where I feel that I can be able to procure more money, then they go for such things. There are things we are aware of them, but we need to be very scientific and professional in dealing with those issues rather than becoming personal. What we are doing, we are developing a production strategy. That production strategy will inform the mechanism strategies that the country and each province need to have. Then we believe that by doing all those reorganization of our program designs and also of our policy, because even some of our policies, there are quite a number of gaps of which we'll be getting, the parliament will be getting the recommendations on which policies we need to review so that we can have an impact in our delivery service as is outlined in our new mandate for the government. I think that disaster, we do have a report on the disaster per province and everything. We are going to send forward that report to you. And consolidation, I think I've mentioned the issues of consolidation. And the decline in the budget, I've also indicated that as a national department, we need to decide where do we want to go, which areas need investment, and then we commit our funding to those areas which talk to our policy aims or policy of intervention, and we'll be in a position to do that. Again, it's an issue that probably we can discuss. The manner in which we get funding from National Treasury is another area probably which could be linked to the recommendation of the FCC. Thank you. I'm saying we need to share some ideas, because I know that some of the issues have not been properly communicated to them, hence they were adamant to fund those projects. And again, on our side, we have not been properly professional in presenting that kind of information to them. I think we are reviewing all those things so that the National Treasury can also be comfortable to say, yes, we understand, we could see the link right up to the policy impact on how it's going to happen. Not only policy impact, but also the economic growth of the country on how it's going to take place by the projects that we're doing. So that is the process. It's an interactive process. We'll try to engage them on a regular basis, because if we don't do that, we're not going to get funding. Thank you.
Are you done with your...
Chairperson, I tried to encapsulate everything under one discussion. I'm not sure if there's something that I've left out, because some of the questions, they are interlinked.
Are you done? I noted all the other.
Chair, just a comment. Chair, I like the enthusiasm and the positivity displayed by Mr. Horse. But he must remember one thing. Judging by the performance of that department in the past, I have doubts. And he must prove us otherwise.
Definitely.
Now, Chair, there are certain issues that we have raised. I'm not asking for responses now regarding whether they have assisted people who are now in trouble with the land bank and things like that. I would appreciate by the end of next week them sending the responses to us in writing. Those few issues that they haven't been able to respond to. Thank you very much, Chair.
Because that is issues we can take back to our constituencies when we go through the NCLP week. Not to answer now, but for future, what bursaries do the department give for students that want to study in agriculture science, as well as researchers? And then to make better use of agricultural high schools in the different provinces, I submitted a presentation to the minister. She was then the MEC for agriculture in the Northern Cape. It is a success story in the Eastern Cape. Not now, you can respond at the later stage. What is the last thing I put here? And then we will give opportunity now to Treasury. Thank you for the department, for your presentation. I want
I would like to invite you to my constituency to come and address communities there, because I've got a rural constituency and an agricultural constituency. And would like, it's not far away from here. It's 130 kilometers on the N7. But we'll discuss that in future. Thank you for your presentation. If you want to leave, you're welcome to, we will release you. But you can sit and listen to Treasury's response. I'm going to give Mr. Tao, can I just get Abram, he's going to church. We will give Treasury now a response. I ask members, please be patient. Let me deal with this in an orderly fashion. Treasury, can you please respond?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Deputy Chair, and members, for the opportunity just to give National Treasury's observations, not just of today, but I think also just to conclude overall observations as well. With respect to the three departments that presented today, I think the issue that was raised by the Department of Water Affairs that's extremely critical that links up with the FFC recommendation was the issue of operating and maintenance.
Just a moment.
Sorry, Wendy, at the time now, you know, you're presenting not at the very right time, you know. There's just a lot of movement, you know. Please, if you can just, that's for the 5 minutes. I know she's not going to be long. Thank you.
Thank you. I definitely won't be long. And to the issue that's important to take forward there is how do you fund the operating and maintenance of social infrastructure, which is linked to infrastructure provision to poor households, as well as how do you fund the operations and maintenance with regard to economic infrastructure where services are provided to people that pay for services. With regard to the second presentation by the Department of Human Settlements, an issue that was very stark is that integrated planning must inform the appropriate housing program that must be supported, and then the appropriate funding needs to flow with that. With regard to the third presentation, committee members also mentioned it, that although agriculture reform and support is very important, past performance on the actual spending has been quite low, and it's quite glad to hear that the department is jacking up its performance to get that improved expenditure. And I think that is specifically important for the committee going forward to actually monitor that that is really happening. Then just a few last responses as well that's important is that we need to in future to be much more proactive of seeing how we can take the FFC recommendations forward. Just an important issue here as well is that it's not just a one-way process. What we've also determined sometimes when the FFC makes recommendations and when you actually start working with the actual implementation, it doesn't necessarily align to what it actually wants to be achieved. For example, the presentation or the proposal made that we must fund rural expenditure so that we can benefit the rural areas when we've actually done the work, because in municipalities, the majority of municipal roads are actually in the urban areas. You actually do not benefit the rural areas, but the urban areas. There is provision in the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act that we can ask the FFC to do further work as well, and most probably what we need to do over time is ensure that that process is much more complementary. Then I think also what's important, and it was raised today as well as yesterday, again that issue of coordination, that's extremely important, but also I think very important is that national government and provincial government has got a key responsibility in supporting municipalities in executing their mandates, and similarly, a national government has got a key role to support provinces in the executing of their mandate. And when failures, and including failures in spending, is detected, it mustn't just be we're doing nothing, but actually see how we can actually provide support to each other. And I think those are some of the issues that can be taken forward in the future NTPS process. Is the issue about the EPWP grant, is the issue about how spending capacity can be boosted up to ensure that key priority areas are funded, not in terms of spending capacity, but actual need, And the last issue that's also important is how you appropriately fund disaster management. It's not just an agricultural issue, it's disaster management as a whole. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the input from Treasury. I believe there won't be questions now for Treasury. Honourable members, we dealt with the Department of Water Affairs this morning and we said they must come back. I liaise here with the good lady next to me, Toko. Possible date is Wednesday the 19th of August, the afternoon at 5 o'clock. I believe there's a plenary. That's a possibility. But the committee section will sort that out with our co-chair here in the NA, Honourable Sigourney, that we see what is practical. Secondly, that is now for the members of the Select Committee on Finance Appropriation. Next week, the NCP will be going to its NCP Strat Plan workshop. In June, the committee adopted the strategic plan for the next 12 months, or what is left of the financial year. There was a request from the House Chair that we must present a 5-year strat plan at next week's workshop. I responded to that letter this morning because I received the letter last night that at this stage it's not possible. We can do a wish list, but it's not possible to get this committee together to go into a formal strat plan session before next week. Inputs, and that's the question we asked at our first meeting, on the 12-month strat plan can be given to Mr. Nkize, the standing our content advisor, researcher, and let we put that into our presentation for next week, or any other proposals that members want to make. The reality is time is not on our side, so let's friendly request that if there were things this weekend and on Monday, Tuesday, please make your submissions to Mr. Nkize. All the members, that brings us to the end of today's meeting. Thank you for your indulgence. Thank you for your participation. We had a long week starting on Monday with all the meetings, and we wish you well for the weekend. Remember, Sunday is a day for the women, Women's Day, and then we'll see you again next week. This meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye.